Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, October 26, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. Or if anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find the banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. You can also support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Yeah, I was a little late on hitting that share screen. I was having a problem with that, but I think we got it going now anyway. Okay, we're going to pick up on our scripture reading where we last left. We read Matthew chapter 10. We're in Matthew chapter 11 right now. And so this is the gospel read by Alexander Scorby. Matthew chapter 11. Sorry, I think it's 12. Yep, it should be 12. Let me correct that here. So, Matthew chapter 12.
Chapter 12. At that time Jesus went on the Sabbath day through the corn, and his disciples were an hungered and began to pluck the ears of corn and to eat. But when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto him, Behold, thy disciples do that which is not lawful to do upon the Sabbath day. But he said unto them, Have ye not read what David did when he was an hungered, and they that were with him? How he entered into the house of God, and did eat the show bread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them which were with him, but only for the priests? Or have ye not read in the law how that on the Sabbath days the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? But I say unto you that in this place is one greater than the temple. But if ye had known what this meaneth, I will have mercy and not sacrifice, ye would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath day. And when he was departed thence, he went into their synagogue. And behold, there was a man which had his hand withered. And they asked him, saying, Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath days? That they might accuse him. And he said unto them, What man shall there be among you that shall have one sheep, and if it fall into a pit on the Sabbath day, will he not lay hold on it and lift it out? How much then is a man better than a sheep? Wherefore it is lawful to do well on the Sabbath days. Then saith he to the man, Stretch forth thine hand. And he stretched it forth, and it was restored whole, like as the other. Then the Pharisees went out and held a council against him, how they might destroy him. But when Jesus knew it, he withdrew himself from thence, and great multitudes followed him. And he healed them all, and charged them that they should not make him known, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Esaias the prophet, saying, Behold, my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved, in whom my soul is well pleased. I will put my spirit upon him, and he shall show judgment to the Gentiles. He shall not strive nor cry, neither shall any man hear his voice in the streets. A bruised reed shall he not break, and smoking flax shall he not quench, till he send forth judgment unto victory. And in his name shall the Gentiles trust. Then was brought unto him one possessed with a devil, blind and dumb. And he healed him, insomuch that the blind and dumb both spake and saw. And all the people were amazed, and said, Is not this the son of David? But when the Pharisees heard it, they said, This fellow doth not cast out devils, but by Beelzebub, the prince of the devils. And Jesus knew their thoughts, and said unto them, Every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and every city or house divided against itself shall not stand. And if Satan cast out Satan, he is divided against himself. How shall then his kingdom stand? And if I by Beelzebub cast out devils, by whom do your children cast them out? Therefore they shall be your judges. But if I cast out devils by the Spirit of God, then the kingdom of God is come unto you. Or else, how can one enter into a strong man's house and spoil his goods, except he first bind the strong man, and then he will spoil his house? He that is not with me is against me, and he that gathereth not with me scattereth abroad. Wherefore I say unto you, all manner of sin and blasphemy shall be forgiven unto men, but the blasphemy against the Holy Ghost shall not be forgiven unto men. And whosoever speaketh a word against the Son of Man, it shall be forgiven him. But whosoever speaketh against the Holy Ghost, it shall not be forgiven him, neither in this world, neither in the world to come. Either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt, for the tree is known by his fruit. O generation of vipers! How can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you, that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. Then certain of the scribes and of the Pharisees answered, saying, Master, we would see a sign from thee. But he answered and said unto them, An evil and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign, and there shall no sign be given to it, but the sign of the prophet Jonas. For as Jonas was 3 days and 3 nights in the whale's belly, so shall the Son of Man be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. The men of Nineveh shall rise in judgment with this generation, and shall condemn it, because they repented at the preaching of Jonas. And behold, a greater than Jonas is here. The queen of the south shall rise up in the judgment with this generation, and shall condemn it, for she came from the uttermost parts of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and behold, a greater than Solomon is here. When the unclean spirit is gone out of a man, he walketh through dry places, seeking rest, and findeth none. Then he saith, I will return into my house from whence I came out. And when he is come, he findeth it empty, swept, and garnished. Then goeth he, and taketh with himself 7 other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter in and dwell there, and the last state of that man is worse than the first. Even so shall it be also unto this wicked generation. While he yet talked to the people, behold, his mother and his brethren stood without, desiring to speak with him. Then one said unto him, Behold, thy mother and thy brethren stand without, desiring to speak with thee. But he answered and said unto him that told him, Who is my mother? And who are my brethren? And he stretched forth his hand toward his disciples, and said, Behold, my mother and my brethren. For whosoever shall do the will of my Father which is in heaven, the same is my brother and sister and mother.
Okay, that was the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 12. All right, kind of want to revisit something we spoke about a few weeks ago. We did a PowerPoint, and just want to go back into some of the things. I'm not going to do another PowerPoint tonight, though. Been having some problems with PowerPoint on this program. But anyway, I'd like to look at a few things. You know, there's a Supreme Court case where we read concerning common law, and it says common law as distinguished from Roman law and modern civil law. Civil law is Roman law. And the canon law and other systems, the common law is that body of law and justice theory which was originally developed and formulated and is administered in England and has obtained among most of the states and the people of the Anglo-Saxon stock. Now, of course, common law has been abrogated here in the United States. It's been abrogated in England too, a lot further back than here. Just a quick look at the difference between equity. We read also in another case where we read that common law is distinguished from equity law. It is a body of rules and principles, written or unwritten, which are fixed and immutable authority and which must be applied to controversies rigorously and in their entirety, and cannot be modified to suit the particulars of a specific case or colored by the judicial discretion, and which resists confessly upon and rests confessly upon custom or statute, as distinguished from any other claim to ethical superiority. Anyway, sometime back, maybe about 3 or 4 weeks ago, we were looking at what took place ultimately to destroy our common law. And, you know, the revolution really has never ended. It continues to this day. And hopefully through the Trump administration, it'll come to a final end. But of course, it's up to the people to make that really happen. It's not up to Trump. It's not up to his administration. It's up to the people. And when we go back into history and our founding fathers, they had a lot of problems in the beginning when the Constitution came into being. There was quite a few people who were not necessarily citizens yet to begin with, and they were trying to decipher the difference, I guess, between the people who were and weren't, you know, after the Revolution, which again has not really ended. But they had a problem with the British bar. The British bar was very active in the colonies, and now at this point the United States. And they were so problematic, not only in our courts, but in with our legislators, and also in our economics here in this nation. And so there was such a problem that in 1819, our founding fathers passed the 13th Amendment, and it reads this way. If any citizen of the United States shall accept, claim, receive, or retain any title of nobility or honor from any emperor, king, prince, or foreign power, such person shall cease to be a citizen of the United States and shall be incapable of holding any office of trust or profit under them. Now, the key focus here is not necessarily on the title of nobility. The title of nobility is inherited. I just learned that recently. And I was focusing myself on that particular word, the title of nobility. But it's really the title of honor is the focus. And the title of honor is something that it rests upon an individual that someone that is of a title of nobility might give them, for instance, to knight somebody. There were three positions particularly. One is the gentleman, second is esquire, and third is knight. And the British bar, anybody who became a member of the British bar was an esquire. And it's not so much in the title, but the title brings really with it, what that title brings is a holding to or a holding up of a belief, even above citizenship. And that's where the problem begins. Only a couple of years after the 13th Amendment, which disappeared sometime in 60s or the early 70s, 1860s, 1870s. Not sure exactly when it disappeared, but we do know by 1876, the original 13th Amendment was nowhere to be found anymore. There is remnants of it, of course, in our records. We can prove the fact that it did exist. We do have a copy of that. We have different states that of the original 13 that did, record it, and it was ratified. But again, it was concealed sometime in the 1870s, probably. And we'll take a focus of 1876 particularly. But anyway, 1819 was that 13th Amendment. And it was 1822 was the Treaty of Verona, which was an assault upon America ultimately. It is when the king and the pope secretly agreed to undermine the American system of government via this treaty. The British monarch breaches the Treaty of Ghent, and both the Pope and the King secretly breach their trust as international trustees. they set out on a covert action and issued letters of marque and reprisal to the members of the Bar Association, allowing them to act as foreign agents on American soil and as privateers free to plunder American commerce. And, of course, our justice system, ultimately our government, completely. In response, in 1823, President Monroe responded with what we now understand and call the Monroe Document, which, by the way, has been executed a few times, I believe. Monroe followed Adams' advice and laid out an independent course for the United States, declaring four major points. This was in December 2nd of 1823 in an address to Congress. And he made these four basic statements. Number one, the United States would not get involved in European affairs. And, of course, these are the things our founding fathers early on discussed and made a point of. If anybody goes and looks into the Federalist Papers, you'll read about that. Number two, the United States would not interfere with existing European colonies in the Western Hemisphere. Number three, no other nation could form a new colony in the Western Hemisphere. And number four, if a European nation tried to control or interfere with the nations, with a nation in the Western Hemisphere, the United States would view it as a hostile act against this nation. In his Monroe Doctrine, he said that the people of the West are henceforth not to be considered as subjects for future colonization by any European powers. So, again, this is a problem, and it continued to really cause problems in America. The Organic Act of 1871, which created a foreign state, within a city, formed a corporation called the United States Incorporated. And it's ultimately we are under that particular. Let me see if I can mute. Getting some sounds coming through. They were. Let me see where I was. I lost my place here. Okay. Anyway, I was talking about the Organic Act of 1871. The United States of America, Inc. We've been living in the United States of America, Inc. and not in the United States of America. People have been living in the land of Oz for a long time. This is, again, is an assault upon our nation, ultimately by foreign nations, I guess you would say. Well, not actually, it's a group of people we understand is the New World Order. And they pretty much control a lot of nations, of course. The United States is the most important one to take down, and when the United States falls, then the world will completely fall. If the United States does not fall and can succeed, then the world could be saved and many nations will be followed. Anybody following the news today will can see that really the setup is really there to achieve the destruction of the New World Order. And it appears that it might be coming next month, throughout the end of the year. I think we're going to see a lot of big changes. But it was in 1878 when 75 lawyers established the American Bar Association. Okay, and in that establishment of the American Bar Association, they too refer to themselves as esquires. And it's not so much anything in the title that is the problem. It's in what they believe and what they've been taught. And ultimately, the purpose of the British Bar was to destroy America, to bring America back under the rule of the King of England. And nothing has changed. And in 78, when these 75 lawyers established the ABA, they picked up and continued in this process. They've destroyed our courts. They've destroyed our legislators. Most of them are traitors. We've been under an oligarchy since at least the death of President Kennedy. They killed him. And we've been under an oligarchy ever since. Of course, we have Reagan, who tried to get through things, and but of course he was controlled to a large degree. I'm sure he was threatened thoroughly, and he had some problems, of course, trying to do whatever he thought he would have to do. But it wasn't until Trump, who's controlled by nobody but himself, and he is said that he was elected to not take more power, but to give the power back to the American people. So it's up to the American people to take that. So we have the American Bar Association here in America. We have over a half a million, or just about a half a million, bar attorneys throughout the United States. And 80,000 of them are working diligently day and night, ultimately, in Washington, D.C. I wonder why 80,000 working in Washington, D.C. But that's what we have, 80,000 lawyers working in Washington, D.C. Everywhere you go, there's a lawyer when you deal with the government or any large institution. They have total control over, you know, our legislation. I mean, there's a lot of things we can show that they've controlled our legislation, has made great construction of law, turned our common law into civil law. Common law is not civil law. Combining common law, which is referred to as just law, anything that is called just law, in law, at law, but law itself is common law. Any other law would be statutory. It could be equity, lawful or unlawful. Lawful equity would be lawful, equity legislated authority through a republic, a constitution, by the people, under nature's God. That's the only line that brings us down into a lawful common law, I mean lawful equity. Equity is referred to also as positive law. So we have positive law and we have law. It's equity and law. And the legislators in 1934, they passed the Rules Enabling Act. And those Rules Enabling Act allowed the Supreme Court to write their own rules. And they came up with Rule 2. And Rule 2 combined equity and law, and they call it civil law. We're in jurisdictions unknown. Our courts are de facto courts. Anybody following what we're doing in the courts, we've been in the courts for a couple of years now, and actually for many years, really, but I mean, particularly to fight this big battle, we started in 2019, and we've been filing quite a few papers over the course of the last 2 years. And or year and a half, whatever it is, and the whole focus is really to expose this problem that common law has been abrogated, and the emperor's got no clothes, because when we look plainly into this, it is so clear, and yet nobody seems to see it. Only the people can bring this back. And that's why the people have to get up. And only the people can maintain a government by consent. If we don't have the people consenting to a government, then who's consenting to our government? Government is consenting to itself. It's out of control. No matter what we do, we will end up right back to government controlling if we, the people, do not step up and take control of this government and bind it down with the chains of the Constitution. And this conspiracy, they've taken total control of everything. They've confiscated our goal. They've changed the rules and brought them into the rules of the civil law courts. They've changed our law. They've changed us from a republic to a democracy. And then we have the Bretton Woods Agreement in 1944, another act of treason. The United States surrendered to the centralized banking system. And they had just had a plan to destroy the currency of the world. And they used the American dollar to make the deals out there with the oil to do that very thing. And they brought most of the nations of the world, at least those that are called democracies. Democracy is nothing more than the state of a government en route to an oligarchy, a dictatorship. we have the CIA and the NSA. They created a national police state surveillance grid. The United Nations, in preparation for one world government, population control, forced abortion, sterilization, etc., etc., etc. In 1950, there was a report put out by patriots in Congress, and the report was a report of the National Lawyers Guild, and it revealed that a bar communist plot. In other words, they're trying to ultimately, you know, we see what's going on, to move us into a Marxist nation. You know, Marxism, communism, Nazism, it's all the same isms. It's the same thing at the end of the day, total control, slavery of the people, the New World Order. In 1954, the Internal Revenue Code, they brought that out, was created by the Barr-controlled Congress. And they didn't necessarily control Congress by the numbers, but they were able to control Congress. In 1954, we also had the Dodd Report. This is the Reese Committee on Foundations concerning Un-American Activities in the Government, and the findings of the Reese Committee was very revealing. It was found out that the big foundations were promoting internationalism and collectivism. Again, right back to the isms, the Marxism, communism. And by their subversive funding activities, they pose a very clear threat to American democracy, which again, at this point, turned to a democracy. And again, we were a republic and our very way of life. In 1963, President Kennedy was assassinated. And just weeks before his assassination, he said, "A revolution is coming, a revolution which will be peaceful if we are wise enough, compassionate if we care enough, successful if we are fortunate enough, but a revolution which is coming, whether we will it or not. We can affect its character. We cannot alter its inevitability." And here we are. We're at the pinnacle. We're at the precipice. In 1968, Robert Kennedy was assassinated. In 1968, Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. In 1971, the Southern Poverty Law Center, they're the arm of the bar, whose purpose is to excite violence by federal agents and police upon we the sovereign people, who are trying to make sense out of this out-of-control federal judiciary in order to be free. James Traficant, in his bankruptcy speech in Congress, addressing the House, revealing the bankruptcy of the United States into the congressional record, "All United States offices, officials, and departments are now operating," he said, "within a de facto status." Let me go back and read that again. This is what he put onto the record. "All United States offices, officials, and departments are now operating within a de facto status, United States of America, Inc." This is why they set him up, and he went to jail for a while. He came out and he died. Many people think he was assassinated, but in any event. And this was, he said, operating within a de facto status in name only under the emergency war powers. "With the constitutional Republican form of government now dissolved, no longer here, the receivers of the bankruptcy have adopted a new form of government for the United States. This new form of government is known as a democracy. One step away from ultimately a dictatorship. Democracy is just setting up the oligarchy in order to become an ism. Known as a democracy, being an established socialist communist order under a new governor for America. And it certainly isn't going to be anyone that the people would want. In 2001, we have Homeland Security, whereas the police state surveillance grid reached its maturity. Everything you say, everything you do, everything you write on any kind of, either phones or any kind of an electronic thing, that goes out onto the web or out in from phone to phone or wherever it is recorded. Every email you send, everything you write and type on your computer and send out onto the internet, no matter where you send it, it's recorded, every telephone call you make. In 2013, John Kerry signed the United Nations Arm Treaty. And of course, today we have outcome-based socialist education, and the people are ignorant. We're living in a fantasy. We're living in Oz, ultimately. We're living in a fantasy. We don't have the truth. We don't know the truth. We, the people, have become slaves, and we are ignorant, for the slaves must be ignorant. And we are ignorant. We're ignorant to who we are. We're ignorant to our heritage. We're ignorant to our republic, our law. 2018, on 11/21/2018, German Chancellor Angela Merkel had an event by the Konrad Adenauer Foundation in Berlin, stated that, here's what she said, sovereign nation states must not listen to the will of their citizens when it comes to questions of immigration, borders, or even sovereignty. At the event, she made it pretty clear she was attempting to push globalists. And so it brings us right back to where it all started, where the king and the pope, and others, of course, but particularly those two, they were working diligently to destroy what we have here in America, a government that should be by the consent of the people. The good news is that the structure of the United States, created by our founding fathers, is still there. Everything is still there. It's just distorted. And it's controlled by enemies, both foreign and domestic. And we, the people, have to take that control. This is the mission, National Liberty Alliance. This is what the message we're trying to get out to everyone, that we have to take this back. We have to learn the science. We must save America by becoming educated and then taking these positions up. And without taking these positions, we cannot save America. Only the people can save America. Donald Trump cannot do it. He can set the stage. He can make things right. He can destroy the deep state. But that disease will return unless the people take control. So everybody needs to really get involved. Last week, I was asked how many books we sold so far. We've been selling books now for a couple months, I guess. So I'd like to just kind of run through a quick review of what we've done, where we're at, and it's up to the people and where we're going to go with this. But last year, NLA, National Liberty Alliance, we received $10,000 from two people, $5,000 apiece, for the Sheriff's Handbook campaign. We needed $40,000 to go forward, and we couldn't collect any more than $10,000. The $10,000 sat in the bank for a while, and we did use it to keep ourselves above the red. We've been in the red since we started, except for the last year or so we've come out of the red. But prior to that, we've been in the red. I personally have been taking my savings to keep things going. I had things going before we started getting any money. We really only started to collect money until we didn't start collecting until after we decided, we're going to charge for the government by consent course, and that is what's been carrying us now. And we're in the black now, and we're maintaining. We have $5,000 left over, so we're going to move that $5,000 over to buy 100 books. Now, I'm taking, we need to really get this program going, our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. It's an absolute necessity. And we're hoping that in every county where we get a book for a sheriff, that there's at least one individual that's getting a book themselves and is reading it. So we have a couple of people in every county starting to work on the grassroots and bringing things back to a government by consent. So I'm donating an additional $5,000 from my retirement savings. It brings us back to the $10,000. And I will, if I have to, put as much as I can of the profits of this book also back into National Liberty Alliance, as much as I can. We need to do what we have to do. This, of course, is from my retirement savings, which I really can't afford, but I believe in what we're doing. There's no use in continuing with anything if we can't save our nation. Lock and load is all we have left. Anyway, to date, from 9,000 members, we have sold a total of 78 books. 39 of those books are going to sheriffs. And like I said, I'm going to donate what I'm going to donate in the $5,000 we have in the bank. That's a couple of hundred books. Those couple of hundred books are going to go to sheriffs. If we do get the people start to really become active in this campaign to really decide, let's save this nation, then you know, maybe we'll get enough to cover all of the books, and then I'll take these 200 books or so, and we'll give them to other individuals. You know, we got to get individuals in government that understand to some degree what a republic is, so that we could teach them what a republic really is. Few people really understand what liberty is. Liberty is freedom from government legislation, ultimately. I mean, if you really want to boil it down, freedom from the laws of men. That's what liberty is. And to place ourselves under the righteous law of God, that's what liberty is. So the total number of books for sheriffs at this point in time is 239. 39 from 9,000 members, and 200 ultimately from two individuals who put up $5,000 apiece. Of course, again, we spent half of that for keep NLA afloat, but I'm replacing that. So out of my own personal money, it's not National Liberty Alliance. National Liberty Alliance doesn't have a savings other than about $5,000, which is left over from those donations. I am asking anybody who has real money, someone who's got a deep pocket, it's time for you to step up. This is the most important thing we can do. There is nothing that is more important than... thanks, Terry. There is nothing that is more important than to bring this nation back under nature's God, without which we can never have the blessings of liberty. So anybody who's got some money and can afford to buy a couple of books or 100 books or 500 books or 1,000 books, you got that kind of money, this is where you should be putting it. As for everyone else, you know, $50 is kind of a lot of money for a book, maybe. Again, I'm trying to get out of my publisher, you know, the information, so I can be sure on what the exact price of this book is going to be. You know, they told me it was going to be $48.95, and they're working on getting back to me and figure out the number of pages. They're still working on that. And hopefully we can reduce it. But right now, $50, bear in mind, that covers, you know, we're not charging tax or any tax that needs to be paid. You know, it'll be paid out of that $50. And delivery, you know, it's going to cost $5-6 to deliver each book. So already we're down below what the book costs already to be shipped out. Maybe we can get it down to $39.95, $45, or I don't know. You know, this is the first time I've written a book, so I don't know what. And they don't seem to want to say at this point. But I am pushing them hard now to really see if I can't reduce the price of this book. But let's go back to $50. You know, I contribute to Trump. I'm sure a lot of us contribute to Trump, and once you contribute to Trump, you get these letters almost every week. You get something from them looking for more and more money, and I understand that. They're in a campaign. They need to get more and more money. And their lowest donation on their box to check off is $50. So if you can give $50 to Trump, you can give $50 to the to National Liberty Alliance. $50, you know, instead of buying that computer game for your kid or something, give $50 to a better cause. We've got to get our children off all these computer things to begin with. They're a problem, and they're destructive. They're destroying our children's minds. Between that and school and the social media, our children are being destroyed. I'd be if I want to be around, you know, which I'm not going to be around 40, 50 years from now, but I don't know that I want to be. Unless we do something about it now. So, people need to step up. Everybody can start saving their pennies to get one book. And, you know, we need to get people educated. People need to understand how to take control of this government politically and judicially. And this is, you know, people who come here on a weekly basis every week, and, you know, they're learning and they're seeing and they're knowing what needs to be done. We need to become committee men. We need to become the administrators for the juries, both grand and trial juries. We need to step up and do these things, and we need to respond to the jury call. We need to connect with our sheriff. We need to educate the people in our community. We need to raise up from the grassroots. National Liberty Alliance has no intentions of making any kind of a leadership role from the people in the grassroots, but only to stimulate the grassroots for the people to come up and raise up to become educated. What we are trying to do is to set up the system across the United States for uniformity. That's it. And Brent has written a book on the militia of the several states. We took that book and created a course out of it. People can buy that book on the right-hand side of our website. Scroll down, you'll see the book is available. People can buy that. It's a little pocket handbook that you can have, just like the constitutional books. And so you can get that book, but you can take our course. I think you should do both. And the course lays out what are the things that we're trying to build: a proper structure, a proper organization, the way this should run. A county in California should be running the same way as a county in New York, at least to some degree, you know. Same thing with the committeeman process, organizing our counties, connecting with our sheriffs, rebuilding the militia, saving our nation. But it can only be done through an education. People need to be letting other people know about National Liberty Alliance, getting them here to our meetings, getting them here to our website. I'm going to make a statement. I made this before, and it's a challenge. It's a challenge. There is no other organization out there doing what National Liberty Alliance is doing. National Liberty Alliance has the only serious, vital plan that can save this nation. The only one out there. Yeah, there are people doing a little this over here and a little that over here, and there are a lot of errors and mistakes in some of the things that people are doing. You know, take the sovereign citizens movement, okay? You know, in that sovereign citizens movement, there's a lot of mistakes in there. You know, we started off going through that movement. Well, it's not really called a sovereign citizen movement. That's a coin goodness, what was that bar association we just spoke about, as a matter of fact? Let me see if I can find that. But anyway, let's see.
Southern Poverty Law Center?
Yeah, that's it. It was 76, I think, wasn't it, that they came out to be in. So, look it. They're the ones that really, you know, started this thing with an individual who killed a cop, him and his son, I believe. They were both, you know, gunned down themselves. But they took that situation and they claimed it to be a major movement to the United States, and that anybody that is saying certain words or taking certain positions in law particularly, they're sovereign citizens, they're cop killers, and they're dangerous. And this is the kind of thing, to some degree, we're up against. But if we, the people, don't step up and do something, we have to do it. There's nobody else out there doing it. This is it. We are here. And so, anyway, we've sold 239 books for sheriffs, and another 39 books that people bought for their own personal use. And that's where we're at. And hopefully we can give a better report next week. We have any questions or any announcements to be made, Jim?
We have the same announcement this week that we had the last couple of weeks. That's that we need help with the welcome committee. We need people who are willing to talk on the phone and members as well as old members to try and rejuvenate them. And that's the only announcement that I have. If you're interested, just send an email to Gary Will. I believe it's will@nationallibertyalliance.org. And he would be delighted to talk to you about it and give you all the input you need to be able to conduct it properly and train you, hold your hand, and get you going on it. Other than that, I have a number of questions.
All right, well, before we go to that, let me just finish off what I was saying. You know, my challenge ultimately is if there's someone else out there doing what we're doing, I'd like to know about it because we should connect with them as long as we're compatible. There is an individual been trying to connect with us for quite some time, for years. As a matter of fact, they appeared on the scene about a year after we started doing what we're doing, you know, with becoming National Liberty Alliance and going forward with the courts. And that's the Anna Von Ritz movement. She seems to have seized control of the entire sovereign citizen movement, if we want to call it that. The people who believe in going into the courts and fighting fiction with fiction. You're not going to win fiction with fiction. You know, we do have to use their statutes against them, the lawful ones, of course. You know, the key, there are three steps in her plans, and this is very important to really understand, and anybody that's involved in that movement needs to really rethink it out and consider what I'm about to say. First of all, they ask you to give up your citizenship. And let me tell you something, if you're no longer a citizen of the United States, you're an individual without a country. And in theory, you could be cast out. You're not a citizen here. Second step is to recharter the federal states. In other words, rewrite the Constitution. That's the second step of a plan. She wants to organize, get people from into every county, and that have given up their citizenship and done other things, you know, your driver's license and everything else that goes along with it, and then recharter the federal states by rewriting the Constitution, and then hold the Continental Congress to create a new nation. And that nation, no doubt, will be without natural law. There's no getting away from that. Look at who could write a better Constitution than the Constitution that was written by our founding fathers? Well, who can put together a document such as the Bill of Rights to make as part of that Constitution more powerful than what our founding fathers? The only reason we the people are still alive as Americans today is because Jefferson and Madison and many others just would not allow that Constitution to go forward without a Bill of Rights. That Bill of Rights is what has saved us as a nation and kept at least part of our liberties together. At least we believe that we have liberty. We believe that we have just courts, a common law court. Of course, until you get into that court and discover that you don't have no rights, that they change the rules whenever they want to change the rules. You know, in a default, and we've got two defaults right now, we've won two defaults. We've won a default against the Jen, can you mute yourself? You're coming through. We have one default against Facebook, okay, and we have a default against the IRS, and another group of individuals working with the IRS. I have a default with them too. I think I don't think they answered, so we have another default. And when someone defaults in the courts, and you know, these are the rules. This is it's in their books. It's to them the law. When you default, there's only one way you can get back into that court and get past that default. Number one, you have to show proof that you didn't receive that document. Okay, of course, when they default and you write a an affidavit of default. You make note and show all the papers, they were served, so on and so forth. But that's the first thing that they have to get past. If they can't get past that, they can't go anywhere. But there's a second thing. If you can show that you were not served, there's one. And the second thing, you can show that you have enough information to possibly win the case. Those are the two things required. And this judge, I think her name was Sebral or Sebral, I'd have to go look it up, something like that. This judge has decided that they didn't have the intent of doing wrong. So she's going to throw out the default. That's everything against their rules. They can't do that, and we have a plan to deal with that now. And again, we've been working on this. I've been working on this a couple of weeks. I'm really putting together a couple of papers that have to get out there, and then the next paper that would deal with the problem. But first, we have to get our position into the court, and I've been working on that paper for a while now. But as soon as we get this laid out, we will share it with everybody. We do believe that we should be able to get a win for all of the joinders, for the people who have been denied due process, for the people who've been denied habeas corpus, which again is due process, of sitting in jails and judges just ignore it. So we have a plan to, we've always knew we were going to do something to bring that back. That's why people are joining the cases with us. We never promised anyone or told anyone that we can get their case won now or next week or next month. Some cases might be able to be won. There are a couple of cases that we that did the right thing because of the pressure that the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury put upon those courts or upon those judges. But very, very few. Count them on one hand. And but we have filed hundreds of cases, and you know, we've got quite a few joinders, and we do expect to get justice. And the whole purpose behind doing what we're doing there, we've explained this before, for those who maybe wasn't paying attention or didn't hear it, you know, is to build a RICO case against the federal judiciary. Because it's exactly what it is. Nothing less. RICO. On steroids. In a judiciary. And that includes the United States Supreme Court. And we're going to see what they do once we get to the other side. And the other side is going to begin to get to the other side in, what, 7 more days or so? 8 more days? Once that vote is in, and it'll probably be a few days beyond that before we actually know. But I think we'll know right away because I think it's going to be so overwhelming. It doesn't matter anymore. We'll see. And that's when all hell is going to break loose here in America. People need to be prepared for that. All hell is going to... If you're not ready for this and you don't have, you know, water and food and something to get through for the next month or so, we may get into such a situation so bad that our food supply may struggle to maintain anything worth anything. So I strongly suggest people be prepared for this in the upcoming weeks. We know they're not going to just lay down because they're going to the gallows. They cannot escape the gallows. There's no other solution but the gallows or long-term prison sentence for most of them. But the big ones, the ones that, you know, again, you got to prove treason and... with this case, I don't think it's going to be very hard to prove treason against all of these major leaders. But there are a lot of people involved that, again, they may just spend long-term sentences. But that's up to the justice system. That'll be up to the juries that make these decisions in these cases. I'm thinking that, you know, remember Trump went out and rebuilt everything out there in Cuba for prison and Guantanamo Bay. And he spent a lot of money out there, if anybody remembers that. And the question is why? I think a lot of these people are going to be tried militarily, and it's probably going to be all of them at the same time, you know, just like they did at the end of World War II. probably something like that. But everything that's pouring out now, you could start to see, you know, Red October, as Q says, and has mentioned on numerous occasions, Red October. We're in Red October. And, you know, it's coming out. It's spilling out everywhere. And after the election, I think all hell to be paid. But there may be a disruption, not absolutely, but maybe a disruption in the food supply. So people should be get at least a month's supply of food in their house. I would get at least a couple of months, even more, if you can afford it. So, okay, questions.
Okay, first question. John, are you aware of the reason why attorneys can say the common law has been abrogated?
Yes,
the word has
too.
Multiple English definitions, one of which is a duty that has been shirked. That's the same argument you yourself have been making here, that the people have been shirking their duty to uphold common law. Bouvier's also alludes to the situation with the latter part of their legal definition for the word.
The first part of the question, read the first part of that question, which is actually the question itself, I guess. Go ahead.
Yeah. Are you aware of the reason why attorneys can say the common law has been abrogated?
Yes. Attorneys have no clue on what common law means. And I'm talking about bar attorneys that are total. And there are some bar attorneys that have woken up because they continue on education themselves and looked into the Constitution, start to see the contradictions and start to scratch their head and try to figure this out. And if they continue in trying to figure out what's going on, they'll get it. I think most of them don't. Most of them don't even think about trying to learn anything more than what they've learned in their bar school. That's my opinion because, you know, experience has shown me they all have the same mindset. They will repeat to me over and over again that we're under Roman law. That's what they say. We're under Roman law. Just think about what that means. Because I'm going to read this again. Common law as distinguished, and this again is from Black's Law and the United States Supreme Court ruling. It's within one of the rulings. Common law is distinguished from Roman law, the modern civil law, similar to Roman law, the canon law and other systems of canon law, that is that body of law and justice theory which was originally developed and formulated and is administered in England and has obtained among most of the states and peoples of the Anglo-Saxon stock. So they've replaced, and they even have, there are some statutes that refer to civil law. You know, after the Rules Enabling Act, the statutes started referring to civil law. And the rules, they refer a lot to civil law. And we read, for instance, up on, let me read this. According to the Federal Judicial Center in 1938, pursuant, this is a government website, okay? And it's the Federal Judicial Center that runs this website. So it's a judiciary. And what they say that in 1938, pursuant to its alleged authority under the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, the Supreme Court enacted uniform rules of procedure for the federal courts. Among the changes wrought by the rules were, and I quote, the elimination of the federal courts' separate jurisdictions over suits in equity. Under the new rules, suits in equity and suits at common law were grouped together under the term civil action. You are under civil law, Roman law, Justinian law, Babylonian law, the very law that imprisons the body and the souls of men, the spirit of man. Destructive control is also referred to as municipality law. You know, go to any, all of these municipalities, all of these, whether they're cities, towns, villages, counties, even states, they're under municipality law. And we're just beaten up all day long, violated and beaten up and in a RICO process. This is organized crime on a worldwide level. And, you know, the entire nation we are in statutory prison. We are imprisoned by statutes. Can't do this, can't do that, got to do this, you got to do that. You got to report on yourself, tell them how much money you're making, pay your taxes, your slave tax. When clearly the Constitution says that there should be no direct tax. You cannot have a direct tax in a free nation, otherwise you're a slave to that nation. And anybody who's paying taxes is a slave to that nation. That's why so many of us have been fighting. You know, it's hard enough to live life with the way the economy is these days. The middle class is pretty much destroyed, almost gone, if not totally gone, but it's almost gone. And everybody's struggling, and then we got to pay them, you know, a percentage of our paychecks. You know, we've been enslaved, and it only gets worse. The focus was to destroy the middle class. They accomplished that. President Trump is bringing it back. Again, he can bring us back to where we need to be, but it's up to the people to take control. He can give us back the power that the people should have, but the people must be capable of taking back that power. So he says, I'm going to give you the power. That's great. What are you going to do with it? Now what? What do you do? How do you take that power? How do you exercise it? How do you control the courts? How do you force the courts back under common law and positive law called, which we refer to as equity? How do you do that? How do you force Congress to be obedient to the Constitution and stop passing and putting and inserting all of this problematic and evil statutes or legislation into our laws? How do you even put them under control? How do you stop a Pelosi? I mean, this is insane. Why can't we, the people, stop a Pelosi? Why? Because people don't know how. Can we stop a Pelosi? You bet we can. Can we stop a Hitler? Give us 50 governors, all Hitlers. We can prevent them from doing evil if we, the people, control the judiciary and control the political process. If we control those two places, we can tie them down with the chains of the Constitution. We can remove them from office at will. At will. We can remove them from office at will. They will be obedient to the powers that are the people then. But right now, the people don't have the power, and the people don't know how to take up that power. Only the people can save the Republic. Okay, so Rule 2 is what destroyed that. And as long as people believe in the fiction, there it is. You got to get at least, you know, look at, we don't have government by majority. We have government by majority that participates. And if the majority that participates understands their heritage, understands how to take control of the political process, how to take control of the judicial process, how to force common law courts back into our courts, how to tie these judges down and prevent them from ruling on issues where they have no... The United States Supreme Court has no authority to rule on issues. They are there to rule on equity and nothing else. And also to protect the Constitution, of course, to protect the rights of the people. They can rule on that. And it's expected that they would do that. When you go to a federal court, you say, I'm not getting my due process, that federal court should be perking up to protect you and to make sure you get your due process or shut that court case down because they can't give it to you. And they can't give it to you. And it's not just the federal courts that is, like I said, look at it's municipalities. They all have their own civil law. Whether you're in a village, a town, a city, a county, a state, they're all under civil law. They all followed suit with the federal government. They have taken control of all of it. And only the people could take it back. We the people will never, ever, ever have the opportunity of today. This window of opportunity, I in my heart did not believe we would get. When I heard that Trump was running for president, I thought, there might be a flicker of light here is what I thought I saw. Because, we know about Trump here in New York. And we know his positions politically. And would he dare do what he said in the past that he would do? And so I had hope. Prior to that, it was my opinion. My opinion was that we're going to have to lock and load. That was my opinion. I thought that's how it's going to end. And what we see now, how deep the deep state is, and how deep it is within the countries, even, you know, Giuliani recently said he didn't even realize how deep the deep state was, and he knew what took place down in not with 9/11 in New York City. President Trump, who knew what took place down there in 9/11 New York City, he too said, I never realized how deep that deep state is. Lots of people, I perceive, before the end of the year, maybe 50% of the people in power are going to be in jail. I mean, I can't see any other way to get around that. It's pretty bad. And so we have an opportunity that will never come again. We need to yield back to what President Kennedy said, you know. We have to take the opportunity and make it a peaceful transition. And the possibility is here with a peaceful transition. You know, President Trump, I think the cure, so to speak, for this virus that he wants to use the National Guard to disperse to the United States as soon as it's ready. I think it's ready right now. I think that's a cover story, that he's going to just get the National Guard into the streets throughout the United States in order to bring forth these inoculations for people who would want it, to have it prepared and ready quickly. Q said a while back ago, we're not going to let the violence spill out into the streets. We've been seeing violence in the streets, in the cities here and there, and the governor's refused to do anything about it, and the people need to see. And that's why he's allowed that to happen. But when it comes down to the end, these people are not going to just give up. They're going to fight tooth and nail to the end. They'll bring any disease they can drop on us, any weapon that they've got, because for them there's only one direction for them to go, and that's to the gallows. They don't want to go there, so they're going to do everything they can. And Trump has prepared for that, and I think that's the cover story. You know, we're going to get the cure out there real quick. The cure doesn't have to be out there real quick. It could be dispensed very quickly, you know, through the systems that we have set up already into the hospitals and so on and so forth. But anyway, that's where we're at. Okay, next question.
Okay, what is the actual cost of the book? You can get them printed in paperback for less than $5 in that quantity, guessing at the size and pages, and probably less than $10 for hardcover at lightning-press.com. Mm-hmm. Yet you are asking $50. They may even never even read those books. Are you getting ripped off maybe on the printing price?
Well, no, I've got I'm with Dorrance. It's a well-known publisher. They're going to assist me to try to get into the bookstores. But it's really up to the people to do the pre-buying so that we can have a lot of books sold when we when it actually comes out to print. If we can buy 5,000 or more books, you know, that sort of allows them to be able to use that as leverage when they speak with these chains to get the book into the chain stores and into the libraries. That's part of the leverage that we need to get the book out there. You know, the book in its title and in its preface on what it's about could help us, of course, but I don't know that that's strong enough to get a book where the bookstores would look at that and say, yeah, we're going to take it. But you come up with a strong premise, a strong preface, and a good title, and a book which is powerful, which the preface lays that out, and 5,000 books are sold as soon as it goes to print, that gets their attention and gets them to take that leap maybe to get the book. Yeah, I've looked into that. I still would have to hire an editor. An editor might have charged me maybe $4,000, $5,000 to edit the book and make sure all is well. So I'd have to have done that. I spent $10,500, which we've collected, I think, I don't know, $25,000 or $3,000. Again, I'm digging out of my own pocket paying those payments. If people can help, I can really use their help, I'll tell you. But in any event, I'm going to get that done one way or the other. People don't come up with the money, I'm going to get the money out myself. And we'll get books, we'll get out as many books to sheriffs as we can. I'm going to get books to all the sheriffs in Michigan right away. First order of business as soon as the books come out, because there are sheriffs in Michigan working together to reinstate the Constitution. They're learning to become, constitutional sheriffs. We need to get our books to them, and they're working to form, to come together, to do something. But anyway, yes, I could go up and do that, edit the book myself, and put it up on Amazon and other places maybe, but get it up on Amazon, get Kindle going and all that stuff. But that's not going to get me into the bookstores. It's not going to get the sales on a national level. It's not going to get me into the libraries. There's a huge amount of work, which, first of all, I have no knowledge on how to even try to even do that. And so that would take a lot of time for me to go figure that out, and I don't even know if I can accomplish it. You still have to sell a certain amount of books also, and then you have to sell it to the chains. Success for what we're doing is the book is part of the success, part of the plan. It didn't become part of the plan in the beginning, but as time went on, I started to realize a book is necessary. We realized courses were necessary, and a lot of other booklets that we need. But this particular book, we realized, it's necessary to get it out there. We got to get it to the general public. Look, there are lots of people. When Trump goes to do a rally, 10,000 people, 40,000 people, or whatever, show up. I mean, even off the spur, like today. I think it was today. Yeah, it was today. Off the spur, he had a rally going, and it wasn't planned, and thousands of people showed up. Okay, these people realize there's a problem. They may not be as understanding of the conspiracy as many of us is, and how deep it is, and how bad it is, and how serious it is. They will know soon, but they know that there's a problem, and they know that Trump has been delivering, and they know that he's got the answer, and they are following along with him, and they are supporting him financially and morally, and with prayers, and showing up at rallies. If I had the time to go to the rallies, I'd go to a rally myself. I travel. I don't have that time. I don't have that. Just don't have that time. But in any event, those are the people that we need to get to. And the only way we're going to get to those people is if we can get the book into the bookstores. And we have to get it into the chains. That's where we got to get it. And that's why I went that route. Yeah, I can go and print the book, opposed to publish a book. Two different things, by the way, because that's printing a book. The other is publishing a book. Even though you can go through, the changes and do different things, it's still printing a book. It's not publishing. And so I would have made a lot more money, if I went that route by pushing it through the membership and so on and so forth. But that's where it would end. It would get out there little by little. We need critical mass. We got 9,000 members, and 9,000 members do not come to these meetings, okay? So we need people who will come to these meetings. We need people who are out there really putting their time to do something, and teach them to do something here. Educate yourself, step up, and take control of our government from the grassroots within your county. And that's what we're teaching. That's what we're doing. So, yeah, it was a decision. I was back and forth on it. But after exploring all my options and looking at the results that would come out of this option or that option or the other option, I took the option that would get me where I'm going. Now, not every book that you go to a publisher with will publish your book, okay? It is true, I'm paying a lot for that book. $10,500 is what I'm paying. But I'm paying for their services and their expertise, for their campaign to get my books out there. But I got to work hard between now and the time when the book finally is released to get enough sold to be able to help them to have the leverage to leverage this book into the bookstore, because that's where the success of our movement has got to bring us. Also, I've been talking about this for a while. I need to get out into interviews, myself and Gerard. We need to get out into interviews, into places that have, large memberships. Now, YouTube is going down. A lot of places have been shut down on YouTube, but they have moved to alternative sites, and I've been to them, and they're getting pretty active, and numbers are climbing there, so they got the people that are hearing. So we still need to get those interviews. We need to be interviewed by X22, for instance. You know, we were contacted by people with, oh goodness, what's that guy's name, ex-CIA guy, Jen, that we're talking with someone in between to get interviewed by him. Can't think of his name.
Is it Steele?
Steele, thanks, yeah, Gerard. Yeah, Steele. Steele wants to interview us, or at least someone that is representing Steele says that Steele wants to interview us. And he's got a large listenership. We need that. We need the exposure. We need critical mass. We need 30,000 people across the United States. That's a drop in the bucket when you look at the population of the United States, over 300 million. We only need 30,000 people to be successful. 30,000 people will seize control of our political process, seize control of our judicial process, bring common law back, and bring the rule of law back into our legislators and start getting rid of these people by recall when they break their oaths. People need to understand the power of the committee man. When a county chairman, it doesn't even have to be a county chairman, it could be a town chairman, okay, or it doesn't matter who, but a county chairman makes a call to any elected official within the control of that district, that county chairman sits in, and says, I want this, that, or the other thing, or I want to meet with you next Thursday morning for coffee or whatever, okay? Whoever they call, they're going to meet with him, and they're going to hear what they have to say. And if they don't do the will of the committeemen, because the county chairman would be representing the whole county, okay? Hey, we got some voices coming through here. So let me mute some people here. But we have the county. If you have a county chairman who represents, for instance, my county, we have 235 committeemen in the entire county, and the chairman represents those people, you know, ultimately, and he represents the will ultimately, or should be. Now, that's not the way it works now, because right now it's a top-down structure. We need to bring it back to the bottom-up structure where the chairman represents the will of the 249 committeemen in my county. So when that chairman, when we come together as a group and decide on certain things, look, if this guy's got to do this, that, or the other thing, or we're yanking him out of office, he's gone. He's not obeying the Constitution. He's not doing what he said he was going to do. He's not doing the right thing. We want him out of here. So they take the vote. The chairman makes the call, gets the guy, says, look, you start to do the right thing or you're out of here, and we'll have you out of office in 90 days through recall. End of subject. Done deal. That's the power of the committeeman, okay? And they work together through the political subdivisions. You got the town, or the villages, or the cities, and you got the county, and then you got the state, okay? And that's really the extent of it. Ultimately, you do have the national committee, which should be representative by the state chairman, who is representative and voted in and agreed to by all of the committeemen in the state, okay, to be able to pull out of that position at any given time. You know, we don't just put people in for a term and they could do whatever they want. No, we're not giving anyone carte blanche, and that's not the way it works. But if it works that way, and you do the will, and the state comes together, when the states come together as state chairman, for all of the states come together, they have the power and the ability to remove the president of the United States at will within 90 days. That's the power of the committeeman. So, if the people want liberty, you have to get involved with the committeeman process. If the people want liberty, you have to learn about it and do it. And we have to teach our children to do it. It's a two-year stretch. You vote, get voted in as a committeeman for 2 years, that's it, and you're done. 40 hours a year, approximately. Some places a lot less, and some places maybe a little more. 40 hours a year. And what are you meeting for? You're meeting to decide the important things of this nation, whether who we want to put on the ballot. We decide who goes onto the ballot or not. We decide who we're going to pull out because they're not doing what they said they were going to do. They're not obeying the Constitution. They're not honoring their oaths. We're going to take them out. You see, that's where we got to go. And maybe you can't do it now, but maybe 10 years from now you could do 2 years. We have to teach our children they have a duty to become a committee man once, at least once in their lifetime. They shouldn't be in the position any more than 2 years. They should pass it on to someone else as long as someone else is available to take it, you know. This, matter of fact, maybe we should even think about limitations so that the people actually get up and do the job. You can't have the same people doing the job and everyone else kicking back, and then you forget about what's going on, what's happening, and corruption builds in, and we're back to the same old thing again. If we don't get this cancer out and maintain the necessary medicines to prevent it from coming back, Trump could get it out. We are the medicine to maintain it and keep it out. So we have to do this. Nobody else can do it. Now, I don't know, was I responding to a question? I don't even remember, to be honest.
You got lost. Hey,
I did.
I tried to segue in, but I couldn't stop you. You mentioned Michigan.
Yes.
With the sheriff.
Yes.
Well, there's a piece of breaking news I got from Robert O. today.
Right.
He said the Secretary of State, Michigan, and you know it came down from the governor, put out an edict that if anybody's carrying a firearm, they will not let them vote. And the Michigan State Sheriff's Association quick flicked back a note and said, we are not enforcing that edict. So this is a war.
Absolutely. And Michigan is at the front of this war, and we have to support Michigan. And that is one of the main reasons I decided to put $5,000 of my own money that I don't have into this. And I did it as an example, too. This opened up last week when people asked, they wanted to know. We're not going to not tell them, so we'll tell them. We'll tell them the truth.
Right.
We sold 76 books. That's what we sold. 76 books to a membership of 9,000 to save this nation. Have you bought your book today? Look, I'm not in this for the money. I couldn't care less. I need money to live, of course, and I want as much money as I can get to live, but I don't need more than what I need. You know, I've never been a rich individual. I've never been greedy. I've always just been reasonably comfortable. I've had lived famine and feast and famine. That's been my life. Time's going really good and time's going really bad. I just want to be comfortable and live a life. That's it. And I am committing myself and a lot of my profits to back into what we're doing right here, because I'm putting my money where my mouth is. And I'm putting my mouth out there to bring this message out. Everybody else has to do it. If you can't afford $50, start saving up $5 a week or $5 a month until you can get $50. Okay? And you got to get your sheriff. Look, we've seen people respond, it's not worth it. All these sheriffs don't know. Most of them, they had a sheriff threw me out of my house, and sheriff this and sheriff that. That's because they're ignorant. Get them the law. Look, sheriffs have been taught one thing. Just like any of these other cops, they got to follow the law that's been given to them, and they're following statutes. We got to take away those statutes, and we need to give them the law. The sheriff is a common law guy. He's a common law enforcer. He doesn't enforce statutes. He doesn't enforce codes and regulations on anything other than his own people within his own structure. They have codes and regulations they got to follow. And they have certain statutory controls there, I'm sure, but definitely codes and regulations, okay? But when it comes to the law, the common law, that's what they don't know. They don't understand it. You know, Gerard had a conversation with the sheriff who said, well, I don't know what to do. I don't know. Yeah. Sheriffs don't know what to do. They don't know. They don't have the power because they don't have the knowledge. Knowledge is power. Everybody knows that. Knowledge is power. Knowledge gives you control. Sheriffs need knowledge so they can have power and take control. So you could take a sheriff that thinks he's doing the right thing by throwing this family out of their house, or this old woman out of her house, or whatever it is that they're doing that's evil, and I'm sure he feels bad, okay? But he's just holding up the law. That's all he's doing. But he doesn't know he's not supposed to. He's supposed to, you know, there's a lot more involved in this. In these kind of foreclosures, they're all non-judicial foreclosure. I haven't seen a foreclosure ever that wasn't a non-judicial foreclosure, even if it went into a court, because it doesn't end up with the judge's signature on in the end. There's no one to hold accountable. So people need to understand what's going on here. We do have to re-educate ourselves. It does take a commitment. It's going to take more time. to do that, some of your time to do that. You're going to have to take $50 here or there in order to buy yourself a book and buy your sheriff a book. But you need to do it. Okay, we all need to participate in this. And so we need critical mass. We are not going to accomplish our goal without critical mass. We can't lose the window of opportunity we have. Right after the election, November, December, and January, those 3 months are the 3 months of focus. We need to get out to the masses. We need to get critical mass. We need to get this book into Barnes and Nobles and all these other big chain stores. We must accomplish that goal. And that's going to be accomplished by the work that we do, by buying books for our sheriff and ourselves, getting the word out, getting people here to come, get to the membership, make phone calls, give some of your time up, call. Will's handling that, right, Jen? Is that Will that's handling that? Yeah. Get a hold of Will. I think Will's email address is he's got an NLA address, doesn't he, Jen?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, so it's will@nationallibertyalliance.org. Get a hold of him. Tell him I'll get on the phones and call membership and try to talk him back into the game. So, only the people can do it, save the Republic. All right, is there another question out there?
Yes, I have been meeting with a few men and have another meeting with them Wednesday night. We are formulating a plan for my county. I thought for sure you already had a document with some great ideas on steps to develop the relationship with our sheriff and sheriff-elect. Can you tell me where it is again? I've been all over the website. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, if you go up to, let's see, if you go to Grand Jury, up to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, okay, on the blue bar, People's Duty. Everything under People's Duty spells out everything that needs to be done. We talk about here, we have a campaign for constitutional sheriff. Click on that. Participate in that. Organizing your county. Click on that. Participate. Organize the way we're setting it up. You know, look, we're trying to use, excuse me, we're trying to use as much as we can in the way our founding fathers did things, but we only have so much information on that. But we can look at the structure, the way things are to some degree, see the problems within them, and remove them. And that's what we did. We brought together a plan that will give us uniformity throughout the nation. It's not what people have to do, but just how to structure ourselves and organize ourselves. Okay? We have to organize ourselves in such a way that no one person can take over any committee and take a control and pull a Pelosi. Okay, that's what we have to prevent. And we have done everything we can in our plans to prevent that, with the, whether it's in the militia, dealing with the Committee of Safety, the committee men, or even with the administrators. We have a plan to prevent and protect those offices. And they are offices of trust. They're definitely positions of trust. I guess they'd be an office of trust. But the committee man is an office of trust, no doubt about that. Okay, or a position of trust. Okay. And we have a plan, and that plan is just a uniform structure. So follow the structure is what we ask the people to do. As far as the problems, the details, what to do here and what to do there, each county, each state has their own unique problems and situations. And they'll figure it out on their own and do what they got to do and operate within that structure that keeps them free. Organizing your county. And we also have a tab here. If you haven't, it's surprising to me how many people I have met in the Liberty groups, in the Liberty movement along the way. And I've been in this since about 2000. And my interest started to focus in about 1999. But 2000 is when I joined We the People, and I started to get involved in these kind of groups. And they're a pretty educated group of people, by the way, We the People, very involved. They stick their hand in the pocket every time and get the money out and pay, and they come up with what's necessary to get things done. So they're a very powerful group, and they're nationwide. Okay, not big, but they are. They have a presence in probably most of the states. And but anyway, other than that group, as time went on, I'm very surprised, Ron Paul movement, the Tea Party movement. And from time to time, you know, you get talking to people and you find out someone isn't even registered to vote. I don't know how many people out there in the movement that is not registered to vote. Registered to vote. There's nothing more important now than this particular election. And I say vote Republican down the line, because you have to at this point. Give Trump as much power as you could possibly give him. And, of course, we'll have traitors. We got rhinos in the Republican Party. We'll find some of them probably in the gallows, too, or in jail. We're going to see that. We'll find out very soon, I think. Okay, register to vote. Become a committee man. Everything you need to know and was afraid to ask, how to become a committee man. Click on that link and get to that page and find out how to have true consent of government through the committee man process. Okay? Committeeman members in your county, once we start to get people going into that, we'll be listing them by county, and people within their counties will be able to see other committeemen within their counties, make the connection, and get the committee of safety going with that, connecting with the sheriff. The committeeman petition process, how to do it right there. The committeeman proposed party rules. This is the most important part of this whole thing in the committeeman is these rules. We worked hard on these rules some years back. I think it was 2013 or so, or 14. I think it was 13. And we met in Kingston, New York, all of the elected committeemen. It wasn't a lot of us, but there was, I don't know, 20 or 30 of us or so, elected committeemen. And we rewrote the party rules, Democrats and Republicans together. We did not separate the difference between the two. Democrats did their thing. Republicans did their thing. What brought us together on common grounds was the fact that they want to reinstate the Constitution. They want law back, okay? So we wrote these party rules to empower the people and to prevent any committee chairman from taking control and becoming a Hitler to the process. So please, you know, follow the structure. The Republic Review, we connected with an individual who has a great idea in a Republic Review to go back and work with Congress to deal with all of the problems in our legislation, to bring us back, bring these people back under the mark, under the Constitution again. Militia registration, we're going to work on this one here, but we want to connect people within their counties and connect as many people as we can and bring them together. All these groups need to be working together. The committee man, the committee of safety, which is just the meeting of all the groups of people together, coming together. We'll call it the committee of safety, which our founding fathers used to save this, to create this nation and to save it. We've got the administrators for the juries. They should be involved in their county and connected with this. These three groups, the militia, the committeemen, and the judicial people, the people, the administrators of the juries. And just everyone else in the county that they can get to come in there and participate, to support financially, learn, and become part of the process. Everyone should be part of the militia. Everybody should be registered with the militia within their counties. And connected right up into the states. The states is really, you know, state-controlled, I guess, to a degree. Maybe Brent can follow up more on that. But, you know, all the committees, all the counties coming together ultimately becomes the state the militia. And the governor can call out the state militia, or the president can call out the state militia. We don't want a national control on that. People have to take control of themselves. But for right now, we do have a registration here. Militia members in your county, how to find them. Militia rules for the several states. Very important to follow these rules. We can go off mark very easy. You've got some people who just are just too gung-ho or whatever and maybe angry and will take this in the wrong direction. We have very strong rules that have to be abided by, and we need them, and they should be uniform across this nation. Become a jury administrator. We'll teach you that. The county sheriff. This is for the county sheriff, and we are reaching out and working with the county sheriff right now. I'm not working directly with them, but we have members who are. And they're working very hard to get the Constitution into the hands and an understanding of the Constitution and education to the sheriffs. And again, a book plays the major role in that, okay? And so we need to, from connecting the sheriffs, and when we get a constitutional sheriff and we have a group coming in, we make the connection between the two. Okay, and each county needs to get that connection going and take control. This has got to be a grassroots thing. National Liberty Alliance ultimately will end up being an advisor and a place where people could become educated for these positions as the years go by. You know, people need to get education, knowledge. We have a lot of good plans on educating all the people through National Liberty Alliance as far as how our political process works, what the offices are that's up for election, who's going up for election in your political subdivision this coming election day, who are they, have them have a 500-word essay about themselves that would be online. They'd be able to click, oh, someone's running for this position, click on it, oh, here's a 500-word essay on why I should vote for that person, and at the end of the essay, here's my website if you want to learn more about me. And the people need to be connected. They need to know what elected positions appoint what individuals as far as commissioners or some other appointment that people are given. So when they break the law, break their oath or whatever, and they don't want to hear from us, we go to the boss. Their boss is the person who appointed them. They're the responsible one. Go fix this problem, because if you don't fix this guy right now, we're taking you out of office. You're out of here. 90 days and you're gone. Give us your answer tomorrow. No, give them your answer now. Whatever. We have to take control of this process. Only the people can save the republic, unless you want to continue in a democracy, end up in an ism. Any other questions? How many more do we have, by the way? Because I don't want to spend too much
one,
more time.
One, two, three.
All right, I'm going to try to keep it short. Go ahead.
The next question is, I keep hearing that a current president cannot undo prior president's executive orders per the ruling of the U.S. Supreme Court. If this is correct, what recourse can the current president take to not be compelled to adhere to previous orders?
Well, that's a good question, and I can't say that I have the answer. I'd need to think about that and look a little more into that. Maybe that question will come up at a later time. Maybe Brent, when he comes on, has some knowledge and can respond to that. I don't know that they should. Those kind of orders are not necessarily things that become law and rules that should travel forever. I mean, the next president should be able to evaluate the situation and make those changes. That's what I would think.
Well, especially if it's unconstitutional.
Well, if it's unconstitutional, that's a no-brainer.
It doesn't have any force in the first place. And the next
that's a no-brainer, then.
And the next thing that he could do is he could, whatever that executive order is, where does it get its funding from? The president can cut the funding and let it die on the vine. And that's what Trump has been doing. On those orders that he's not able to take out completely, he knows how to hit it financially, and that's what he does.
There you go. So, and logic tells me that the president should be able to do that. He's the commander-in-chief at the time and says, hey, this is a problem for our nation. It's not working out. Hey, out of here.
He's actually the CEO,
basically,
of the executive department, and that's what's in his preview.
And if this is an action made administratively without any of the legislative participation, then he doesn't have to go to the legislators to get permission or anything. He should be able to deal with that.
I don't think the Supreme Court can make a rule like that, because it's it's co-equal branches. They can't say, "Oh, we're going to do this for in perpetuity." Who the hell are they?
Yeah,
you know
I agree
mean?
With
really.
That. Look, people should study Jefferson. Jefferson told them to go to hell. You know, he knew there were problems. He said we were going to lose our liberty to these courts, and we have. They have destroyed the common law. They have destroyed the law of the land. They have destroyed the Constitution. It's only here to make it look good. They use it and it looks good. But down here, where the things are happening, where the rubber meets the road, the Constitution is not applied. You do not have unalienable rights in these courts. Let me repeat that. You do not have unalienable rights in these courts today, whether it's a county court, state court, or the federal district courts. Your constitutional right, well, your unalienable rights protected by the Constitution has no protection at all, because they have abrogated the Constitution also. Once they abrogated the law of the land, which is equity and law, once they've abrogated that, it game over. There is no Constitution. It doesn't exist. And that's why they're fighting making certain claims on natural law connected to, ultimately, God's law, the laws of nature's God, which is the Declaration, the foundation of the founding of this country, of this nation, shall I say.
Another piece of current events. When we started this show, within 20 minutes, Amy Comey Barrett was sworn in as per...
Thank God.
As per Terry gave me that information. So that's going to be a good
thing.
So
we win now.
Yeah, we don't have a split court anymore.
Right, we win. End of subject.
That's right.
Let me tell you, Gerard and I have been through this before, and many, many others that have been with us, the committee man process, before we became National Liberty Alliance, we were New York committee men. And when we studied the law and went into it, there are deadlines, and deadlines must be met. Those deadlines come, end of subject. It's like a default. End of subject. Done. You can't take it back. You can't change it. It's over. There is a deadline dates on when all the states must give the report on the voting. And at that deadline, they must give the number, and it's over. You can't add after that. It's done. And that's what Trump is going to exercise. They're going to try to fight that. It's going to be won in the courts. I will say this one more time. I said a little earlier, especially for the people who came in a little later. You better get out there and get enough food and supplies to keep yourself going for at least a month, and I would suggest 2 months or more, but at least a month. Get yourself lots of water and the staples you need, the staple foods that you think you need to survive for 2 months, because there may be a shortage in the food supply chains. There may be disruption, shall I say, in the food supply chains. So get it. Get your toilet paper. You know, get your... Okay. Bread, your flour, and whatever you can get.
And they got big power outages in California. They're shutting the power off purposely, and the excuse they're using is that there's high winds and they don't want the wires starting forest fires, which I don't believe that. I think that's a bunch of baloney. I think it's an excuse. So much, they had 500,000 people without power, and I don't know how many now. They've been shutting the state down, you know, with the power. Now, what happened last time in California...
That could prevent the people from going out to vote. You can fatigue them so much that they're so busy surviving, they don't go out to vote.
Yeah, and there's some major big warehouses in California. Like, a lot of the stuff that comes in from China goes to those three big warehouses on the West Coast. And that's why when this thing first hit with the COVID, Walmart shelves were empty. I took a video of empty shelves in Walmart. It was like you'd never looked like a new store coming in.
When was that?
That was at the beginning of the COVID. Okay. That was in Catskill,
yeah.
New York here.
And that was pretty much everywhere. I know where I went, the store was half the store was empty.
And what happened
certain
is
things
all
just
those
didn't come around.
Distribution centers were closed. Plus they had forest fires. There's the one big place that burned up. You know, that was another part of it. You know, everything got hit at the same time. And I think they planned it. I think a lot of the fires were set purposely. And that's their whole idea, to close the economy down. They want the economy to go down. And they're going to do whatever they got to do to bring it down. So that's why we got to be careful. Because they will do false flags. There'll be fires. There'll be all kinds of stuff. So... anyway.
All right, let me take the last question and pass things over to Gerard. What's the last question here?
Okay, I actually have two. When treaties are ratified, do they take precedence over our unalienable rights? I have heard in the past on how the UN Arms Trade Treaty would abrogate our Second Amendment if it passed the Senate and was signed by the President.
If the people take control and have the knowledge, there is no act anywhere in this entire world that can happen to take away an unalienable right. That's only if we have a people who understand that. You can't get rid of a right through a treaty, through a rule, or through a statute. You just can't do it. They've removed it. Power was given by the legislators to do the rules. And then they took those and made rules and actually legislated by rule to to negate the common law and even equity and combine them together as civil law. And that's why when you go to court, they don't even know what to say. They don't know how to answer the jurisdiction that you're in. I always ask, what jurisdiction am I in? No judge can answer that question because the answers would reveal that they don't have authority over you. And you have to know, you know, if they respond with certain answers, you know, like this one judge responded with the authority to hear a federal question, which this is how they moved my case, both cases, our case and my case, which is an IRS case, and the case against YouTube and Google and all the rest of them. They moved that in under a federal question. So the only thing the judge can do is look at the question and deal with the question. And the question was, does the federal court have the jurisdiction over this case? And the answer is yes, they do. The problem is they now want to bring it into a civil action, a civil law court, okay, when it belongs in a natural law court. From that point forward, that's the only decision a judge could make is, yes, the federal, this must be heard in the federal court. So therefore, it must be heard in a court of law, a common law court, a court of record in the federal court where the people decide and not an elected or appointed, in the case of the federal, it's an appointed individual. They don't get to hear the case. They don't get the decision to make the case. You know, my case in the IRS, I'm still working on it, on a paper to file into the courts, and I have I got another week or two to get it together and get it in. I think I got two more weeks. And my case, when I went through the whole thing, it was 55 minutes of nothing but stupidity and destruction by a judge. And she didn't even understand anything. She didn't understand what a court of record is. She didn't understand that there's an affidavit required for the IRS to do anything. She didn't know about the Form 4490 and the Form 56, which she's on a federal judge. She should understand that, okay, because when a government takes action against a person, they must have a proof of claim, and the claim proof of claim is an affidavit. It's required. You can't open anything or do anything without that. You can't get a lien, you can't get nothing without that affidavit. You can't get a warrant without an affidavit. Again, it's the same thing. So, you know, this judge, I've been going through this case, working on this for quite a while now, and she has taken up the total control of this court, every issue. She has raised issues that wasn't raised by anyone. She's just assuming certain things. My entire battle and argument is against the judge, but very interestingly, I was able to realize something. What she has done, she didn't realize how much she really injured herself by speaking so much. She should have been more silent and let other people... Well, she shut me down every time I went to speak. But in any event, she doesn't understand how much damage she really done to herself because now, because she told me I have to deal with all of these things. Okay, and anything else that they have written gives me opportunity to come in where they have to admit or deny, and in any place they deny, they have to expound upon. So everything that she said, I am going to take that and use it against her and force the other side to respond. I'm in a position now because she's ordered that to happen. She's ordered the other side to respond to that paper within X amount of days, and then she told me, you got so many days to respond to that paper, and then they got final say. Okay, now they shouldn't have final say. I should have final say, but I'm going to let that go. I may put in final say anyway because what they did, they took the final say should be by the defendant. That's who has final to say. Okay, but when you challenge something to go into the courts, then I now, when I have to respond as the defendant, then I turn into a defendant for that period of time, so I should have final say. So if I feel I need final say, I'll make that point and file another paper at the end, whether she likes it or not. But it doesn't matter. They're going to be forced to make statements. I believe I'll have this done by next meeting, and I'll post this up, the paper I'm going to be filing in the courts. I'm going to post it up so people can take a look at it and read it. I think it's going to be very powerful. And anybody fighting the IRS, I think it's going to be helpful. Any case, it doesn't matter at this point. Any case you're fighting, I think it'll be helpful to be able to see the things that takes place in this court. And I will post the response and everything. I'll create a page just for this case, the IRS case, we already have something going. No, we don't. I'll place something in here for the IRS case, and I'm going to post all of the papers that have been put into the courts where people can read and learn from that. I've been given a great opportunity. And as I was looking through this over the weekend particularly, I realized the opportunity that I had been given and how stupid this judge really is. She has put herself between a rock and a hard place. The only way that I can see escape is if this would just put another nail in her coffin, is if the lawyer were to write a letter, hey, they're asking me these questions, and she said, don't answer those, whatever. I mean, how can they even do that? Okay, but that's not the only way they can deal with anything, and that's, again, going to be a problem because we have another step after this that we will be pursuing. The moment I file this paper, I'll be working on another set of papers which will be filed, which will be counteracting everything that she has said and done in these courtrooms, both cases. So, and we'll get that up as soon as we can for people to become edified on it. Okay, one other question you're saying, Jan?
Yes.
And Gerard, you're ready to go with this, to take control, right?
No, Gerard is, he's still here.
Okay.
The question is, I was wondering if you all might consider taking a look at the legal description we are putting together for a recall effort to recall the mayor of Tucson, Arizona. As you may know, the current mayor of Tucson was on city council with Mayor Rothschild. When he elected not to rerun, his cohort, Regina Romero, ran and won. Regina has been a big disappointment. She called a local businessman a white supremacist and used city funds to purchase a giant BLM poster, which cost about $3,000, and unilaterally decided to hang it on City Hall. Would you be willing to look at the language we have going to recall her and shed any light or share any thoughts we could attach in this email in case you are willing? Any suggestions and helpful directions would be appreciated.
Well, look, there is a recipe, if I may, in order to recall. And recall papers, you can't get electronic signatures. You have to have a physical signature. They have to come out of the political subdivisions that the people are living in. You have to discover all of the political subdivisions that elected this. It's a mayor, I guess it's a city, so you've got all the political subdivisions within that city. So you have to deal with all of those political subdivisions. You have to deal with it also. Democrats have to talk to Democrats and get their signatures, and Republicans have to talk to Republicans to get their signatures. The only difference that you can, the only change you can make in that and do it in a different way is if people are a notary. If you're a notary, then they can go to Republican or Democrat. I'd have to look up to see. I think they'd have to swear on every paper then that they work on. You have to sign every paper anyway, but you can put a provision for a notary on that too. And so therefore the recall papers could have a notary. The other thing is it has to be a balance between a certain percentage. I think it's 75%. For instance, if you want to recall a governor, you have to have at least 75% of the counties involved. We have 62 counties here in New York, so 75% or whatever the percent is. I think it's 75, but I really don't remember. So you have to have, it spread out throughout the complete, all of the subdivisions involved. So if there's 30 or 50 subdivisions in that city, then you have to work in each one of those subdivisions to get X amount of signatures in each one of them. You also have to find out how many people voted in that election, and so there's a percentage of that that you have to get. Of the people that voted in that election, you have to get an X amount of percentages and signatures from that. So they have to be done right. They will throw out paper after paper after paper after paper after paper that does not conform to the election law. So I would strongly suggest to get the election law for your state, start working through that to work out the subdivisions, and get the right language, the deadlines. Once you start the deadline, you have a certain number of days to accomplish your goal, And it's a cutoff. It's a drop-dead deadline. If you don't get the number of signatures within that time period, it's drop-dead. You're nothing after. Nothing before.
I think it's easier to use the 14th Amendment and get him on the unconstitutional thing they did and swore an affidavit to the Secretary of State and have him removed for being ineligible.
And if the mayor broke the law and you get enough affidavits and things together, we'll indict him. I can't say we will indict him. I need to say we'll bring them up before the grand jury for an indictment. I'm sure we'll get an indictment, but it's up to the people to say yay. So the grand jury can do that. I would think you'd want to... You see, look, at the purpose of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is to deal with enemies both foreign and domestic that is out to destroy our nation. And so from that perspective, from the unified perspective, we can do it because I think we can make a case that we could do it from that perspective. It's still a grand jury no matter how you get it. It doesn't have to be a grand jury necessarily in that city, but a grand jury that hears the case. A federal grand jury can hear the case. It's like any federal grand jury can hear a case in a district, and ultimately, you know, the same laws and rules apply in every federal district. So generally speaking, you can work with the different, divisions, you know, the federal districts, shall I say, different districts. But anyway, I got to look a little more into it. If they start to do the research, make connection with me, do some homework, I'll help them from there, and we can see where we go and make sure it's done correctly.
Look, I think their public record hangs in their face. I think it's the easiest to get them on the treasonous stuff.
I bet you they haven't even filed their oath of office, therefore there is no one in office.
Their voting record, the stuff that they voted for that was subversive and treasonous, and it's on the record. It's there for everybody to see. They can't deny it. There's nothing to prove. It was written into the law that they signed. They're done. I mean, there's not a whole lot of effort of proving anything. It's public knowledge.
Yeah, it would be a lot easier to go through an indictment or something of that nature.
Yeah, or the 14th Amendment where they're ineligible, that clause that we were working on.
Right. We'll have to look a little more on how we can expound on
that. That seems very easy if it's truly the way they say it is, that you just have to prove that they did this and send a sworn affidavit to the Secretary of State, and then he's obligated to... In other words, there's no indictment, there's no arrest. He just removes them from office as ineligible. There can be an arrest and
so that's what we can work on. They should make contact with us. We'll make a connection, and we'll look into that, and... it's an interesting way to go.
Who brought us that? What's his name brought us that, right?
Yeah, I know him, but I'm trying to think of his name.
All right. I don't want to put you on the spot, but anyway.
Well, you already did. It's too late.
Sorry about that. Anyway, I should know myself.
Yeah, let me finish up here so I can pass things over to you, okay?
Well, is Brent here, too?
Yeah, Brent's here.
Well, we better hurry up.
Yeah, I know. Last question. Do we have one more, or are we done?
No, he's already done.
Huh?
Hey, we're done.
Is that what he said? We're done?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, Brent, you pick up the mic. Are you here? Give us a mic test, Brent.
Yeah, I just picked the mic up.
There you go. Okay, let me introduce Brent. I'm going to turn things over to Gerard. You got the controls here. And this is Brent Winters coming up to speak to us, and he's commonlawyer.com. He wrote the book, The Excellence of the Common Law, by Brent Allen Winters. And you got the mic, Brent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Brent Allen Winters, website commonlawyer, www.commonlawyer.com. You can go there and see how to join us for due process class on Saturday. You can go to church Sunday. We're going through the prophet Daniel. And a whole lot of other things there that are free. Listen to hundreds of hours of me talking. And also, you can obtain the books there, Excellence of the Common Law, 958-page comparative law text, comparing and contrasting the law of the land with the law of the city, on every continent and in every page, every age. It's getting late. in every age, from the founding of the city of Babylon down to today. Well, I'll read a letter I have here. I've gotten dozens of these through the years. I won't read you his name, and they're usually short like this. They come from all over the country. This fella says, I was wondering if you could provide information on how to activate common law in state superior courts, or if you can enter admiralty courts while keeping your standing as a living man. I have numerous issues that I must address, but I wish to address it as a living man without using the all caps name. Any assistance you can offer will be highly appreciated. Without prejudice, and then he signs his family's name, and has beautiful handwriting. It's a special kind of printing. Seldom do you see freehand lettering like this. Well, he's
called calligraphy.
Yeah, calligraphy. That's it. Thanks.
Yep.
I was fishing for that word. But he was he's obviously a disciplined, intelligent man. I could tell from a lot of things he wrote on here, but he wants to activate common law in state superior court. Or can you enter admiralty courts while keeping your standing as a living man? People say to me, I talk about common law, and I say, try to talk about what it is and the simplicity of the big picture. And people say, but there is no common law in our courts. Well, that's what this fellow is essentially saying, too. He's saying there is no common law in our courts, and he wants to know what he can do about it. Well, what can you do? Well, I've spent my time looking at history. I try to. I do think I can see in history that things never change, just the people. And the problems remain fundamentally the same through the ages. I don't care how far back you go, it's always the same. Read the Bible. The older I get, when I read the Bible, it looks like, I know they dressed a little different. No, they dressed a lot different back then, but I can see that they were facing the problems that we face. Well, how does the law of the city, the civil law, which is the antagonist to our common law, how does it get into our courts? Boy, the old adversary is clever, more clever than you or I or any combination of us will ever be. He's been at it for thousands upon thousands of years, and we aren't going to lick him. He's too crafty. And I'm going to read a story here about how, one story about how the law of the city enters into the courts. And it's there. It's always been there. There's always been the onslaught of the law of the city. And I want to read to you from this comparative law text I was telling you about a while ago called Excellence of the Common Law. 958-page comparative law text. I'll read to you a short section in there, available at commonlawyer.com, a short section about the Salem witchcraft trials of Salem, Massachusetts. The Salem witchcraft trials are all about the law of the city reaching its slithering tentacles into the New World. Just a bit of background, we know just from the records of the continent of Europe that we know of at least about 100,000 persons were murdered one by one. They were drowned, they were hung, all sorts of different ways to kill people. under the accusation of being warlocks or witches. A warlock, the old word for a male instead of a female that practices witchcraft. 100,000. You get that's on the continent of Europe where the law of the city reigns supreme. Rome had her priestcraft, statecraft tentacles around the continent, and they went after on witch hunts. The law of the city, coupled with the canon law of Rome, which is a different form of the same thing, like admiralty law, and they worked up people against people and killed them. Well, about 100,000 we know about. 300 in the common law country, just 300 by comparison, died in witchcraft trials. The mania was all over Europe, but it reached into England in a small way by comparison. And then it reached clean across the Atlantic at that time. Every ship that came into New England carried news of the witchcraft rage in Europe. And finally, those same slithering limbs of the evil empire reached into the New World and New England, and nine persons were hung under accusation of practicing witchcraft. So 9 persons in the New World, 300 in England, and on record at least 100,000 thereabouts on the continent of Europe. Let me read what was posted upon the church, the Puritan church door at Salem, Massachusetts, back in the year 1692. Confession and petition, it was. Confession and petition of Judge Samuel Sewall. One evening, while Samuel Sewall was leading his family in devotions around the Bible, conviction gripped him, and he wrote and posted this confession and petition for public reading. Here it is. Samuel Sewall, sensible of the reiterated strokes of God upon himself and his family, and being sensible that as to the guilt contracted upon the opening of the late commission of Oyer and Terminer at Salem, Massachusetts, he is, upon many accounts, more concerned than any that he knows of, desires to take the blame and shame of it, asking pardon of men, and especially desiring prayers that God, who has unlimited authority, would pardon that sin and all his other sins, personal and relative, and according to his infinite benignity and sovereignty, not visit the sin of him or of any other upon himself or any of his, nor upon the land, but that he would powerfully defend against him all temptations to sin for the future, and vouchsafe him the efficacious saving conduct of his word and spirit. Now that's written in flowery Puritan fashion. If you've ever read the Puritans, it's the way they use words is overwhelming. Sometimes you miss what they're saying, but this is obviously a humble and heartfelt confession, a public confession of sin. The Salem, Massachusetts, he was a judge at the witchcraft trials, the Salem, Massachusetts witchcraft trials of 1692, I'm reading from the book, Excellence of the Common Law. These were infringements into the new world of civil law doctrines then raging amok in the old world. In the name of expediency, for about 9 months, the Salem court suspended common law protections of due process. See, that's how it happens. Why do they do it? Expediency. Why are they doing it today? Expediency. Expedience is the cry of every infringement of human liberty. We got to set aside due process. What is common law? It is due process. It is the process that is due and owing to all concerned. It is the course, the way we go about resolving problems. Due process is not a part of the law of the city. The ends justifies the means. Instead of at common law, the means, the way we go about solving the problem, justifies the result. Well, indeed, witchcraft trials is a misnomer. The prosecution of supposed witches in Salem occurred as the civil law reached its tentacle of inquisition into New England through the weaknesses of girlish curiosity and longings for attention, using pranks, followed by fear and attempts to divert blame from themselves for the deadly consequences of their action. Let me sum it up front. The witchcraft trials of Salem, Massachusetts, again, only 9, as compared to the common law country of England, 300, as compared to the law of the city continent of Europe of over 100,000. But still, any infraction is too much. It's because they set aside the common law. What is the common law? It is due process. The way we go about resolving problems, especially in our courts. And it all came about in Salem, Massachusetts. The old devil himself is clever beyond anything you could ever imagine. It came about through a small group of teenage girls. That's how it came about, who thought they were getting attention and thought they were having fun. Well, through the false religion of a recently arrived slave woman, the undiscerning weaknesses of young girls, and the doctrines of the law of the city, murder's spirit wormed its subversion into the enclave of God's people in the New World. Unlike on Europe's continent, where the law of the city dominated and raged, in the New World's Massachusetts Bay Plantation, the laws of nature and of nature's God held its steady sway, soon arresting the evil empire's suspension of common law due process, but not before its vicious rage worked its murder. On the false testimonies and play-acting of a group of young girls that had learned of witches and witchcraft from Tituba. Her name was Tituba, a Barbadian slave woman recently arrived in the colony. 19 men and women were hanged in Salem, Massachusetts. Men and women. The Salem witchcraft trials ignored at least 3 common law rights: the presumption of innocence, objective evidence, and opportunity to cross-examine one's accusers. Throughout European history, the use of images, icons, and incantations has encouraged devil worship. The Germanic tribes used the term witchcraft to signify such practices. Fear of witchcraft, as practiced among women, is among the reasons Rome has used to justify forbidding her priests to marry. Rome's control of her priestcraft has always been indispensable to her power. The Roman Church feared that once a priest married, his closeness with his wife would give her a deeper understanding of the powers of priestcraft, such as the conduct of the Mass and the secrets of the confessional, allowing his wife to use the influence she enjoyed toward her husband to manipulate his use of these powers to her own cravings. Regarding Rome's fear of witchcraft, Rome did not always consider women inferior to men, but on the contrary, held a fear, albeit superstitious, but nonetheless real, of a woman's power over men of Rome's priesthood. These fears explain, in part, Rome's cruel inquisitional reaction during the 17th century, accusing and prosecuting hundreds of thousands of women and men for practicing witchcraft. During those days on the European continent, inquisitors did untold atrocities to those accused of witchcraft, and to a lesser degree in England. The inquisitions against suspected witches and warlocks on the continent and even the witchcraft trials in England, though much fewer, were far and away more vicious and undiscerning than were the Salem witchcraft trials, a touching of the New World by the mania then raging in Europe under the direction of Rome's inquisitors, following the methods of Rome's publication Malus Maleficarium. Malus Maleficarium, meaning the hammer of witches, that's a Latin way of saying it, the hammer of witches, is a manual of civil canon law inquisitional methods and devices for sweating out and wringing evidence from suspected persons, whereby over 100,000 suspected of witchcraft were tortured and put to death on the continent. In the month of May, the year 1487, the Roman Church had first submitted the Latin text of Malus to the University of Cologne. Malus, the name of that book, Hammer of Witches, Malus, you know, is the root of our word mallet, which means hammer. That's why it's called Hammer of Witches. Malus based its methods of inquisition upon the doctrine of the civil law that subsumed a nation's identity in its emperor. Thus, the civil law, the law of the city, deemed crimes to be personal offenses against the emperor. The civil law being enforced on the continent of Europe, prosecution for the crime of witchcraft was, therefore, conducted in true inquisitorial spirit to avenge the suspect's sin against the emperor. Using the devices Malus described, the Roman Church tribunals tortured and murdered both sexes in unknown numbers, though more women than men. On the 5th of December, the year 1484, the Inquisition moved into full swing. Pope Innocent VIII printed in the front of the Malus his papal bull of approval, directing its force to some parts of Upper Germany. Later, when the wicked and cruel Alexander VI was in the papal chair, he set his inquisitors to work. In the Swiss canon of Vaud alone, over 3,000 persons accused of witchcraft were burned. Charles Carleton Coffin, writing in his series of books, Sweet Land of Liberty, published 1881, says this of what happened in Switzerland. They burnt 600 poor old women in the bishopric of Bamberg, Germany. I said, well, the German-speaking areas of Europe, including eastern Switzerland. By the shore of Lake Geneva in the year 1515, during 3 months, more than 500 persons were burnt to death. All through Spain, France, Germany, and Holland, during these years, thousands of men and women were burnt. In the village of Lundheim in Germany, containing only 600 inhabitants, 30 were put to death in 1 year. More than 100,000 were burnt. Due to the common law courts, the mania was less horrid in England than on the continent. In the southwest of Germany, between the years 1561 and 1670, the powers that be accused at least 3,229 men and women of witchcraft and executed them. Before reaching the American colonies, Rome's continental witch hunt spilled over into England. Now, quote here, same fellow, this is Coffin. In the year 1618, 17 witches were condemned to death in Lancashire, England, 16 in Yarmouth, 15 in Chelmsford. Matthew Hopkins was appointed witch finder. In a short time, over 100 persons, men and women, were hung. Salem, Massachusetts's reaction, though inexcusable, was, by comparison, an aberration. The continental inquisitors knew nothing of the common law rules of evidence. The English courts knew these rules, but relaxed them, admitting arbitrary evidence of unestablished reliability, such as the presence of warts, pimples, winds and cysts, said to be evidence of demonic activity. No common law authority says that such blemishes are evidence of witchcraft. Therefore, in England, Chief Justice Sir Matthew Hale, presiding over many trials for witchcraft, tried to hold the court's consideration only to evidence admissible under the common law rules. Justice Hale called the learned physician Sir Thomas Brown to give opinion testimony of the fits of one accused person. He said this, the physician Tom Brown said the fits are natural, said Brown, but heightened by the devil cooperating with the malice of the witches at those instants, at whose instance he did the villainies. Those accused often verified the stories of the accusers by confessing their league with the devil. Soon every ship from England arriving in Massachusetts brought fresh stories of witchcraft and accounts of hundreds, even thousands, of witches in the old world being burned and hanged. And to this fragile enclave, carved into the new world's wilderness, the slave Tituba arrived from Barbados. During the long winter evenings, the young girls of Salem gathered in the kitchen of Tituba's owner, Samuel Parris, and listened to her mysterious accounts of Barbados. Tituba showed them how her people used sorcery to call up the devil and his imps. Tituba then introduced Abigail Williams, age 11, Ann Putnam, age 12, Mary Walcott, age 17, Mary Lewis, age 17, Elizabeth Hubbard, age 18, Elizabeth Booth, age 18, and Susanna Sheldon, age 18, and Mary Warden and Sarah Churchill, two servant girls, to incantations and taught them how people in Barbados imitate animals while under the spells of witchcraft. The girls practiced these imitations, taking delight in creeping about like cats, dogs, and hogs, meowing, barking, grunting, screeching, and pretending to have spasms. The girls, relishing the attention their antics drew, carried their milder larks into church services. One girl, for instance, interrupted a sermon by claiming aloud that she saw a small, colorful bird perched upon the preacher's head. Though seeming mild and innocent, the girls were toying with danger. When questioned about their behavior in order to divert blame, the girls thought it clever to accuse women and later men, young and old, of tormenting them with witchcraft. Thus the Salem, Massachusetts witchcraft trials arose out of confusion, began by these girls' playful antics, excuses, and then hysterics, begun in girlish curiosity, gone awry in fun, but ending in death and remorse. Called before the courts privately, the girls, by that time hysterical, accused Sarah Osborne, Sarah Good, Martha Corey, Rebecca Nurse, and Sarah Good's daughter Dorcas of tormenting them through witchcraft. Well, you see the beginning of how all this comes about, how the law of the city, how evil creeps in. Once the law of the city creeps in, and when I haven't gotten to that, that's when the madness and the superstition of evil begins to walk among people, as happened here. The girls accused Sarah Kloss and Elizabeth Proctor in open court, saying this, I'll quote the girls, Abigail Williams, I'm quoting her. She's under oath. She said, I saw a company of witches at the Reverend Mr. Parris's house. There were 40 of them. Sarah Kloss and Sarah Good were their deacons, and the witches drank blood, close quote. At hearing this, Sarah Kloss fainted to the floor. The accusing girls went into convulsions, and Mr. Parris's slave rolled on the floor, all claiming that witches were tormenting them. The Barbadian, Tituba, when asked if the girls' accusations that she pinches them were true, she answered yes, thereby giving credence to the girls' testimonies. Tituba further testified that the devil had come to her at night, appearing as a hog, or a black dog, or a red cat and a black cat, bidding her to serve him. Tituba then said that Sarah Osborne and Sarah Good asked her to torment the other girls, and that she had gone to meet the devil riding on a stick, with Sarah Osborne and Sarah Good riding behind her, sometimes going up over the trees and on to the town of Boston, Massachusetts. Cotton Mather, the most well-known of the Puritan clergy in New England, still yet today, recorded his perceptions of witchcraft in the Massachusetts Bay Colony. The written testimony of John Winthrop, governor, provides additional credible evidence concerning the Anne Hutchison affair that will move any unbiased investigator to serious consideration. Winthrop served as the first governor of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. His reputation for honesty is impeccable. His credibility as a witness incontrovertible. Nevertheless, common law due process must never give way to the doctrines of Babylon, Inquisition, and vengeance. In later years, one of the hysterical girls, Ann Putnam, having matured to womanhood, stood before the congregation in Salem Village in Massachusetts and humbly apologized for being an instrument of accusations of grievous crimes against several persons, whereby their lives were taken away. And on the 14th of January, the year 1697, Sam Seawall, one of the judges at the Salem witch trials, likewise responded to his part in the trials with Christian repentance. I said 1692. I have the date here right. It's 1697, 14 January, that he posted his confession, nailed it to the door of the church. During the Salem witchcraft trials, the Puritan clergy of Massachusetts counseled cautioning restraint to the courts. Finally, pressure from the clergy ended the witch trials. Pressure from the clergy, I find that notable, is what ended the witch trials. It were better, Cotton Mather had counseled the courts, that due process be followed, and 10 suspected witches, he said, should escape, than that one innocent person should be condemned. Demanding the common law's right to trial by jury, presumption of innocence, rules of evidence, and right to cross-examine one's accusers will best protect the innocent during times of hysteria. Well, that's just one example from history. So what does the evil empire attempt to do in our own day, right now, as I'm speaking? It attempts, as it did in Salem, Massachusetts, to produce hysteria. Hysteria, fear. Because once fear is produced, due process is often set aside and people will accept it. That is precisely what is happening right now as I speak. And you look around and you watch all the useful idiots of the evil empire putting diapers on their heads. You watch the presidential debate, and Joe Biden had one purpose, clearly, and he said it over and over again. We're all going to die. I'm summing up. We're all going to die. What are you going to say, Mr. DJ Trump, to the poor woman who cries because her husband or her child has just died of the plague, just died of the virus? It's all a lie, though, friends, neighbors, and kin. It's a lie, just as this was a lie. But the devil is clever at manipulating the personalities, and by the infusion of one personality from Barbados, who was truly a demon worshiper, but that then transferred over to the girls of the colony, and there was the end, and the influence out of their insecurities and youth and indiscretion and love of attention, it grew into a mania. That's exactly what's happening today. It's up to you and me to not get caught up in the mania, to not participate in it. We are to be the steady glow of reason and fact, even more important than that. And the fact is, there is no virus. No virus, not the one they're talking about. There are millions of virus. There is no virus what they're talking about. It doesn't exist. There have not been 250,000 deaths from this so-called manufactured mania of a virus. The same number of people have died in America on this date as died about last year on the same date. Nothing's changed. But the mantra is overwhelming. What are we to do about it? Well, we take an example and take a warning from what happened in the past. What is it we don't do? We don't do away with due process. We do not listen to the decrees of useful idiots of the evil empire sitting in the office of governor, or even of the courts. Now, many of the courts, for example, we learned of the court, the Supreme Court in Michigan, has said this is unconstitutional, what the governor in Michigan is doing. But the answer is not always, and it won't always work, going into the courts and raising Cain. They're part of the problem. They're not part of the solution at this point. Many of them, not all of them. But the answer certainly is, it may be the answer, the courts may be and are in certain circumstances. But as to you, if you're not involved in a law case, the answer to you is to not participate in the childish madness. Just as this, we're talking about the Salem witch trials, the trials were childish madness of silly girls that controlled a whole colony of people and incited in their tribunals murder. How do you explain that? Well, as I said, 19 died in Massachusetts, well over 100 on the continent of Europe. What happened in the New World was mild by comparison, but the evil empire still slithered its tentacles into the New World. And don't think things have changed yet today. The evil empire still is slithering its limbs into our country in the New World, and we are the target. The United States of America is the target of the childish antics that will grow into murder and destruction and despair. It's happened over and over and over, and it can happen again. It's up to us just to say no. No, I'm not participating. No, I do not agree that there's a pandemic. I don't agree. Well, Gerard, thank you for the time. This is Brent Allen Winters. My comments are my own. May or may not comport with the position of National Liberty Alliance. But as always, I'm thankful for a few moments to say a few words. Words, well, I think, are important. Back to you, Gerard.
Thanks. I want to segue into what you ended with.
Yes.
I'm hearing myself. You're absolutely right. This whole mask COVID mania, it's a mania. It is the emperor has no clothes. It really is. You know, you got a guy running around naked, you tell him what beautiful clothes he has. And this whole pandemic thing is just as ridiculous as that story. Doesn't have any more credibility than that story does. Now, Ollie has put up a couple of websites. One of them is q17news.com, and the other one is videosanctuary.com. And if you go in there under COVID and you look up, we have listed one of the speakers of the Red Pill seminar, Dr. Andrew Kaufman. And this guy's resume is impeccable. He is the premier epidemiologist. He has a resume that's so long and so illustrious, you know, in the different accomplishments. You can't argue with him. And he uses the law and science, and he lays it out. You got to watch that video. It is good. If you watch that video, you'll know everything you need to know about viruses and tests and how they make vaccines. You'll know more than the average doctor knows, because they obviously don't know what the hell they're doing. They don't know about epidemiology, obviously, or they wouldn't be pushing this. I mean, some of them do, but they're only going along because of the politics of it. Go up there, go to that site, watch the Andrew Kaufman video on COVID, and watch how they've never, ever isolated any virus, never proved that it could kill anything, and how they take that test that they're using, which is basically if you had a flu or a flu shot in the past 4 years, or you came down with the flu within 6 months, you're going to test positive on the PCR test, which means the guy that invented that PCR test said that this test should not be used for diagnostic, because all it needs is a little piece of DNA that looks like that. All these common colds have the same RNA, and that's what they're checking. So they take a little tiny strand and they blow it up, and that's what they're basing everything on, which, you know, they've never had a vaccine for the common cold because it's constantly mutating, and this thing is no different than that. It's the same thing. And yeah, it is, don't get me wrong, it is a virus. It is, or whatever it is. I can't even say it's a virus because it's starting to look more like a bacteria. If you do get it and it does live in you, and the only way that it will live in you is if you have a compromised immune system. Most people don't even get any symptoms. You know, it's such a joke. They test people and then you test positive and then they quarantine you and for 14 days. Look, you can come out 14 days later and still have it. Then what are they going to say? You know, and I'm sure that that's happened, but they probably say, oh, no, it's gone, you know, because they to save face. But it's a bold-faced lie. And then whatever they do with that PCR test, then they take pieces of that, put adjuvants in it, and they created a vaccine against nothing except for it's going to kill you because it has mercury and aborted baby parts, and it's going to actually alter your DNA. And really, it looks like it fits with the biblical thing. Anybody that takes the mark of the beast will not be able to enter heaven. And I think it's a transhumanism thing. It actually changes your DNA. When you get that shot, you're no longer human. It changes some fundamental thing in the body, and it controls you. It controls your mind and everything else about you. And it's insidious. Only the devil could have dreamed up such a thing. And 5G enters into it because they use frequency to turn it up or down and to activate it, and they'll do that in different areas when they want a pandemic. They'll just turn up the 5G frequency and people will start getting sick. Anybody that gets the vaccine, they're going to have total control over the population with it if we allow it to happen. So the other thing is I think we should come up with some kind of money for Ollie. He's spending his own funds. He's a retired Navy guy. He's a veteran. He gets Meals from Wheels, and he's put this studio up, and he's done fantastic work. He also needs help. If anybody's in that Colorado area, he needs somebody that he can mentor into these to how to run some of this video rendering software, so he doesn't have to do it all. But he's also looking for citizen journalists. When you are out on the street with your cell phone or your camera and you see news and you take a video of it and then put a little blurb of where it came from, you know, put a story with it, and you send it to him, he'll put it on Q17 News, which right now is very, very important because there is a media lockdown on evidence and news because they know that they're all the information is being dumped. So the only thing they can do is try to hide the information from getting to the people before they pull levers. If all this stuff got out, the stuff that Giuliani's doing, and everybody saw what he has, the evidence that he has, which is only a little piece of it. What he has is not even, all right, I'm going to choose a random number. It's not even a quarter of what's wrong out there, but it's enough. It's treasonous. It's demonic. It's a lot of other adjectives that you could use, and it's unbelievable. And it's just the tip of the iceberg. So what he's putting out there, if people read this and see it, there's no way that they will pull a lever for Biden, because that's what they're all about. They're all about this corruption, this devil worship, this blood drinking. You know, we got transported back into human sacrifice and blood drinking right under our noses in a short period of time. And it's been going on longer than I hate to, than I would like to admit. But it started with Roe versus Wade. That was a blood sacrifice to the devil, and it continues today. So if you get any videos, you need to get a hold of Ollie. If anybody can donate any money to Ollie, because he's paying money for the site, money so that people can comment on the videos. When you go in there and you watch a video, make a comment, because he just put that software in where you can make comments. This is going to replace YouTube and all these other and Twitter. It's up to us to replace those things with a citizen journalism. And Ollie has really, really put his foot forward to provide for that for us. And I think it's a very great idea, and I think that everybody should get on board and start utilizing what he's created over there. Videosanctuary.com and Q17News.com. Get up there, bang around in there, watch the videos, comment. If you got any local news, get a hold of Ollie, send him the clip. He can tell you, he can give you lots of tips about what to do with your videos and how to preserve them and how to get them to him. I mean, we've been using that email service WeTransfer for big files because you can't send a lot of videos. Even Skype doesn't take them anymore because right away they're too big. But this WeTransfer.com is a free service, and you can upgrade it. But they've taken every video I've given them, never give me any trouble, and they work. It works almost instantaneously. It's a great, great service, WeTransfer.com. And look, it's time to get up and do this stuff. It's up to us. And right now, we're not sleeping in ditches and carrying guns. But if we don't do this, that's where you're going to end up. You know, and that's if you're lucky. Because you're going to probably end up in a FEMA camp before that, inoculated, and you won't even be able to think straight anymore. So I just wanted to continue with what Brent has touched on and expand upon some of it and make a plea that we can support Ollie monetarily and maybe even with some help. If anybody's out there close in the, I forget what area of Colorado he is, but get a hold of Jan, and he could give you his address and let you know what area. You know, you can look him up on the site, you know, what township he's in. I know that Terry's within an hour of his place.
Yeah, so, he's in Fort Collins.
Fort Collins. I should know that, but anyway, got to pay attention, folks. This is it. This is, you know, Fort Down, you know. We're on the 2-yard line. It's time. It's time. This is it. You know, let's get going. Anyway, I said my piece. So forever hold your peace. I'm going to open up Ed from Arizona. Or wait a minute. Who's this? Wait a minute. We got Aslu is in there. Is she open? Looks like you're on. What is that? From Montana? Aslu, hello. Are you there?
Yes. Good evening. Yes, there. I'm from Missouri.
Oh, Missouri, M.O. I should know
yes,
that.
Yes.
We did this last time.
yes, thank you for taking my call. I do have a question. I've been, communicating with Kansas on the Kansas Department of Revenue, and I just sent out a notice of demand that John suggest to send, and I just got the green receipt back. But I need to find out if I need to wait on their response, or do I need to go ahead and get my paper, my documents together and file into the court?
It's hard for me to answer because I don't know what you're doing. But if you send a notice and demand in, did you put a respond time on it?
Yes, it was between 30 and 60 days. So.
Right, so they're probably going to default. They're not going to answer you. You know that.
So should I do a default after if they don't respond?
I would do a notice of default, absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
But are you planning on taking them to court, though, to sue them for whatever? Because
Yes, I'm. You know, if it comes down to it, I will.
Yeah, and at some point you'll have to get those papers and file in the court. But before you do that, you should check with, like, Jim or, you know, and let him go through the paperwork that you're planning on putting in. And just go over the whole thing with him because we got a lot of, you know, he could help you because we got papers in courts and he's familiar with the process that you need. Believe me, they're going to hold you to a process. They don't get held to it, but God forbid you should miss a date or you should miss a filing or something. They'll throw your case out without even thinking twice. Just throw it out anyway on Rule 2 or something. But anyway, I'm not saying to not file it, because that's what this is about. We need to hit these courts and these bad actors with these papers. We need to overwhelm them. They need to have them coming in from all different angles. And you know, hopefully we'll get some good judges and some good prosecutors that maybe will pick this up. If we keep inundating them and keep filing papers, you know, to the point where they can't ignore us anymore, and hopefully one of these lawful prosecutors that understand the Constitution will pick up, like, for say instance, your case and run with it. So anyway,
but, yeah, so I mean, should I file with the court that I have in the county here, or should I send it to the court of where, you know,
well,
LA?
The thing is you're probably filing, I mean, I would imagine that you're filing a due process error. That needs to go to a federal district court, because you can't, the county court can't give you
right. Okay.
Recourse with that. They're involved in it. They're the problem, you know what I mean? So when you have a court that violates your inalienable rights, you don't beg them to fix it. You go to their bosses and you tell their bosses, look at this is what they did. They're in dishonor. And you don't talk about your case. You don't talk about losing the house and all that. What you talk about is that they did not follow the process. They violated your due process rights under the Constitution. And that's all you need to talk about. And that's all the court's going to rule on anyway. So don't get lost in the minutia of what they did to you. Because, you know, if you open the door, they'll go there. They'll use it to cloud the case. So just like Dragnet there or whatever it was, just the facts, ma'am, only the facts. The facts of the due process violation. Don't talk about anything else. Okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Now we have Ed from Arizona.
First off, a big hoorah for Amy Coney Barrett.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. She's been sworn in already.
What a blessing.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched some of her answers. She is amazing. And such a presence, and so, I could not hold a candle to her. And she was unflappable. Unflappable, and she had all the right answers. You know, she just did. When they tried to get her on something, she knew where she had to go, and she wouldn't go there. She wouldn't let them drag her there.
Right.
I thought it was great. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay, second. Is there going to be a receipt or anything for people that have ordered the book?
That's above my pay grade. I don't know. I don't know if John's still listening or if Jan knows that they're, you know. I mean, you're ordering the book. What are you using, a credit card or something like that?
No, I wrote a check, and I'm one of those 76 or however many it is. But I don't know if I'm included in there or not, because, you know, I got no response.
Well, I would call Jan. We can find out about that. I can't help you because I don't know anything about that process. I'm not in that. But I'm sure Jan and John could help you. I don't know where you are, but they could look that up and let you know. And maybe,
well, okay, that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. And thanks for your purchase, by the way. Okay. Yeah. We appreciate it.
Gerard?
Yeah.
John asked, I think, that check or money order, or I guess even cash, be used for the books. That way it goes directly to him, and he has it there, and he makes a record, and he needs the sheriff that it's going to, or the person that it's going to, so they'll be mailed out by him. I have not heard that he's going to send out a receipt yet, since the books aren't printed yet. He may when they're printed.
Right. Okay, but he's just keeping track of it, and that's all. So at some point, and I mean, anybody that went into that initial thing, you know, maybe we could print their name and make an honorable mention, or, you know, somewhere on the site to recognize those people that stepped up to the plate. And we could talk about that. But anyway, that's it. Okay? Is that all, Ed?
That's all. I'd like to know that I'm on the list, but that's all.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you are, but, you know, I don't know. Like you said, the books aren't printed yet, and I think he doesn't want to count his chickens before they hatch. But I'm sure that you're in there, and he has a record of it, and at some point we'll run a list out for you to see, okay? I don't know that he'll send you it, or it'll just be printed on the site, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, you're welcome. I don't know who this is. It says Columbus, Georgia. No name, though. I'm going to unmute you. Go ahead. Let's go Georgia. Columbus, Georgia. You got a first name? Give us your first name. Unmute yourself. I hear something. I don't know if that's you or somebody else. Going once, going twice. We're going to go for Barbara. If I don't get Columbus, Georgia to respond, we'll probably put you to sleep. All right, I'm going to open Barbara up. We're kind of over. We're right after 12 anyway, so this will be our last question.
Hi. Hey, Thank you, Gerard. I wanted to ask about a situation that my son has, who's coming up for a immigration interview. He got married to a young Thai woman August of the previous year, 2019, and they're going to have an interview in November. She had a student visa, and she worked beyond what she was supposed to with her student visa. And he said that he knows from, they've hired first one lawyer and that person retired, and now he's got a new one. They said that that's not a problem, that all gets forgiven once you get married. But the thing that the thing that isn't forgiven is if you check the box saying that you didn't work and you did. And he says there's just no way out of it. He's just got to hope that they don't ask him about it. Is that the way it is?
I don't know. I know personally people that have been through that interview, but I don't know the specifics of it.
Okay.
It also depends on the guy that's doing the interview.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, if he likes your personality and he thinks that, you know, they're supposed to make sure that it's not a marriage of convenience, that the person didn't pay you $20,000 to become a citizen, and you're really not in love and you're really not married. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, you know, I mean, come on, if you got your game together, they can't prove that anyway. You know what I mean?
Your game? Oh, right. Okay, right.
You know what
right.
I mean? Like, if you do everything mm-hmm. right and you move and you live together and you got two accounts and all, you know, they're pretty good at flushing out, you know, people that are false, that actually do pay. I mean, I know of people from Ukraine and Russia that have money that want to come over here that have hired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, men and women in America to pose as their spouse, and they go through these interviews,
uh-huh.
and some of them pull it off. And you know, if they happen to be going out and they have a relationship, it's much easier. But if they don't know each other at all, it's
mm-hmm.
hard, because they're going to ask personal questions, and they're going to put you in two different rooms, and they're going to figure out whether or not you're intimately involved. You know,
okay.
and they'll catch you on a stupid little thing. So I would say if they really got married and they're really in love and they really have a relationship, just answer everything honestly.
Okay.
That's the only thing you can do. And I think that, you know, if you strike up the friendship of the guy giving the interview, I think that that'll cover a multitude of sins.
Okay.
I think they have a certain discretion, you know what I mean?
Okay. Do you know, just in terms of legally, does it, he says that his wife did not understand the form when she checked the box.
And
does that matter?
Yes, it does, and that's her defense.
That is a defense.
Absolutely. Look, they should have an interpreter there or something like that.
Yeah, he said that he wasn't there when she filled it out. He looked at it like months later, and he said he could barely understand the form himself, let alone, you know.
How do you expect somebody who's not of this nationality to fill out a form that a guy who's an American can't even understand? And that would be, I mean, if it came down to it, that would be the defense right there. So,
and that's a pretty good defense, you're saying?
I think so, absolutely.
Okay, all right.
And especially if everything else is in order. So you got a checkbox in the wrong spot. I had a little twitch and I didn't mean to check it, you know what I mean? It's like,
it doesn't seem right.
No, it's grade school idiot stuff, you know what I mean? It's like, come on.
Okay.
So, anyway, I that's a good defense. I didn't understand it, and they had nobody there to help me.
Okay.
And my fiancé or my husband or whatever was not there at the time. You know, I mean, if he was there and they checked it wrong, well, then they could get him for colluding.
Right.
So, anyway, they shouldn't have them filling those forms out alone anyway. That's baloney. They should have somebody there, especially if there's somewhat of a language barrier. Now, I don't care if she can speak English. I don't know how good or how fluid she is in
English.
Not
very good at all. Not very good.
I mean, come on. You're going to let this person that speaks broken English going to interpret the form? That's ridiculous.
Okay.
Yeah, you know? Okay?
Okay.
So I think you're good.
Okay.
All right? Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, everybody. With that,
George,
we're going to end. Yeah.
George, before you hang up the phone, this is Francine. If Ed is still on the line, would you just tell him that, yes, I checked the file and we have a copy of his book order? So he is on the list.
Okay. Ed, you're on the list.
Thank you.
Francine checked it. So you are included in that. And I don't know how we're going to, you know, if we'll make a list of that or send you something, I don't know. But you're definitely there. And so when we do that, you'll be the first to know. Okay? Thank you, everybody. Thanks for showing up. And we'll see you here next week, same time. Have a good day. God bless. And listen, fasting and praying. We got like, what, 10, 9 days left? And so keep your powder dry. Pray every day. Fast and pray. Very, very important at this time right now. Okay. Have a good night.